Little Hand says it's time to rock and roll.
Bring the noise.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Everything Action Cast for the week of December 6th, 2010. I'm your host Zach, and joining me this week is Chris.
The Molecular Man.
Okay. And Joe.
Might as well open up a booty sweat.
not a Ford Loco, Joe?
Oh, God, no.
Chris, do you have like a stash of those somewhere, Chris?
I'm slowly preserving them, you know.
You're gonna collect this item. Sell those on eBay.
You can make your own Four Loko.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
Get some Skittles, some malt liquor, like a painter or something like that.
Cocaine.
Tears of children.
Mm-hmm. Like kill a goat before you make it. Yeah, that's a weird way to start the show, but we got a bunch of cool stuff this week. It's the 20th anniversary of Edward Scissorhands, so we're going to be talking about Tim Burton later.
Yay! Boo.
Even more money.
The story of Tim Burton's career. Yay, then boo. The Tim Burton story.
Yep. And we got a bunch of I have a lot of stuff to talk about for show and tell, and we got a bunch of news, so why don't we get right into it. Chris, you weren't here last week, so why don't you fill us in on what you were watching for the past couple weeks?
In the past couple of weeks, I saw Faster Joe, So I don't need to bring up how.
Well, I saw that too over the past week, and I didn't really like it as much as you guys did.
I mean, like, I enjoyed it as an action movie. If I had to watch it for like the plot and the weird plot twists that just showed up for like no reason.
Yeah.
Like Joe perfectly said it that it was like the most male version of Kill Bill ever made. It took the bride like 2 full movies to kill like what 5 people on her hit list.
Well, yeah, but yeah, then there was like 88 people in between there, so.
Okay, but like in Faster, pretty much the movie just begins and like he just starts off. He's just like, "Well, I'm a man about this. I'm just gonna go and like, go ahead and like just do what he has to do." And like, there's just no bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's cool about it. Like, I saw the movie as like not a plot. Like, if there was plot, it was just secondary to like the action.
But it wasn't really.
And certain characters, like,
it wasn't really that a lot of action either. There was like one or two like quick shootouts and like one and two
a car
like,
chase.
Yeah, one or two like lame car chases.
Well, like, the tension and the fact that it's just like Dwayne Johnson, like not being like a tooth fairy.
I'm glad he's back to doing action.
Bad dad. Yeah,
it was like way too fucking dour too. Dour and serious, like, and like every character had like at least two like just horrible stereotypical like character traits.
Yeah, like everyone fell in some sort of archetype.
Like The Rock was like, he's a felon, one, and then like his father hated him, and then like his brother's dead, and it's just like just keep adding up, and like think about Thornton's like heroin addict, corrupt cop, his wife is a drug addict and a like a informant, and it's just like his son's fat.
That's the worst part.
I got you focused on that.
Like, oh, I could deal with everything else, but my son is fat.
He's not good at baseball. Oh, jeez.
Damn it.
One part I didn't get was the crossbreeding between Billy Bob Thornton's skinny white ass and like Moon Bloodgood.
Yeah.
Who's like this mixed bred like Asian Indian Native American. And their
so
kid
she's
looks
basically
nothing
like
their kid is like
she's basically like a Charizard when you stop and think about it. She's very, very valuable and very, very rare.
She's not a very good actress.
I'll see myself out. Yeah.
She's pretty much terrible in everything she's ever been in.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, Street Fighter.
Faster,
Terminator
is not
Salvation.
The highlight,
she almost ruined the like last season of Burn Notice, but she's only into like 4 episodes. But She was completely pointless.
Terrible.
Yeah.
All right.
So, yeah. I was kind of disappointed with it faster. But I didn't have to pay for it, so it was fine.
Lucky you.
Yeah. So, anything else, Chris?
I did throw on Surf Ninjas as a like a nod to like Leslie Nielsen, just like,
mm-hmm. All right, you've reached Colonel G. Please leave a message. Sorry.
Damn you, GameCube!
Like, every other scene, he's only in the movie like three scenes. He's in a flashback, a weird torture like chamber thing, and then he's in like the final battle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he's the like, man, dude.
Yeah, he's the man.
Colonel G's so great.
It makes no sense because it's like he's the leader of this like Asian army.
Yeah,
and he's got to like this. I kind of want to get this Leslie Nielsen Colonel Chief banner. They have like a Leslie Nielsen's face where like because in the movie he's like this white commander colonel guy, right?
Yeah,
and then he gets stepped on by an elephant, and then
yes, he does.
He gets rebuilt with cybernetic parts, and I was drinking during the movie, so I just shouted out, like, we should do this Leslie Nielsen's corpse, like, resurrect him from the dead.
That's awesome.
And it would work. And it would work. Because it's like, in the movie, he's like, he's got all these, like, useless, futuristic, or, I don't know, weird prosthetics that, like, if they get wet, they freak out. And so, like, I know in the final battle, that's, like, his disadvantage during a fight against,
the kid with the Game
like
Gear.
The two brothers. Yeah, with the game, you can predict the future. And, like, the only part I like, another thing about product placement, which is, like, everywhere in this movie,
mm-hmm.
like, the Game Gear, it has, like, a game in it, and, like, the graphics match, like, a Game Gear. Like, they look like something out of a game, something that a Game Gear would play.
Yeah.
You know? It isn't just, like, some sort of simulated thing or some sort of picture. Like, it's actually, like, it looks like a game. It looks like a shitty game, but it looks like a game.
But a game nonetheless.
Yes.
They should have made that game. Surf Ninja, like, it's a Surf Ninja game.
I'm shocked they didn't.
Yeah.
Like Last Starfighter.
Or that Tron game.
Yeah.
But the movie's just really, it's dated as hell. Like, the acting.
Yeah.
The screen. It's like, we looked up the date in it, and Rob Schneider's like 30 in this movie, and he plays like a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
And like, it's weird.
It is weird.
Because I think before this movie, he was already on SNL.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's like watching an SNL show, and then having one of like the random cast members right now pretend to be a high schooler. It's like Tracy Morgan. And it's like he's in a high school musical or something like that. It's just like really...
That would be awesome.
Doesn't make any sense. And Tone Loc's in it.
Yep.
And designed up with Tone Loc in it.
That was like that magical time when like Tone Loc was in like... You thought Tone Loc was going to like explode.
He's blowing up.
Yeah, because he had like... He has two songs, and he had like Ace Ventura, Surf Ninjas. He had a cartoon show. Yeah, Blank Check.
Well, he was in a cartoon show.
He had that, like, weird, like,
yeah,
hat.
The voice of that bear.
Oh, yeah, the bear, yeah.
Yeah.
Can't remember the name of the bear, though.
Wasn't it PJ the Bear? Why do I know this? No, it wasn't PJ the Bear. I'm going to Google this and get to the bottom of this.
Mm-hmm.
I really needed to clear my history after this, because it's going to be Tone Loc Bear Show.
So, anything else, Chris?
It was Sea Bear and Jamal.
Yes.
Which is probably one of the most... ethnically fucked up cartoons of all time, other than
Sea Bear,
like the Boondocks, Sea-Bear and Jamal.
Oh, oh God, what was
and
that?
Jamal wears like African headdresses in every episode.
Yeah. Well, there's like some horrible like NES game that was based on a show. I can't remember. It was some BB's Kids or something, and it was like just about.
Oh yeah, Bebe's Kids.
Yeah.
Bebe's Kids.
Yeah.
Just get it because it was Bebe, like. B-E-B-E.
Yep.
But it's trying to say, like, baby.
Was it Martin Lawrence, like, the father in that cartoon movie?
I don't know. Was
I've seen the movie, like, twice. And it's the most, like... I can technically say, this movie, it's one of those memorable movies you should see once or twice and you never have to see it again, but, like, it stays with you. It haunts you.
True.
I'll talk about it another time.
Okay.
Maybe I'll watch it again. But yeah, I was so busy with like work and stuff that I couldn't. If I'm not watching a movie, because that takes time to investment, if I'm not doing that, I've been watching No Reservation with Anthony Bourdain.
Yes, which
is watching about foreign countries and just like, ah, oh, man, I need a drink and just yell at these people. Like, it's just, you know, it's like every episode's kind of the same, but like, you watch it anyway because you just want to see what it would do.
It's a fantastic background show.
It is. Just like, absolutely. And throw it on and look up, and Anthony Bourdain is like making fun of some farmer. Yes. And then you go back reading, and you look up again.
It's like, your life sucks. I'm white. So you don't mind if I eat all your stuff for free? Hey, do you mind if I eat your harvest? It's like, bring me your finest meat.
Is there a daughter I could take with me?
Sacrifice this dog you were saving for your son's wedding. Yeah. Dog leg.
You too. You know? Knife fight for my pleasure.
That's basically it.
I do like how some episodes he just has random like friend guests. And sometimes like they're famous. You know? Like, I remember one episode we talked about was the Ted Nugent. And I was like, how does Anthony Bourdain know fucking Ted Nugent?
Like, he doesn't. It's like he just showed up because like these two are opposites. What will happen? It's like wife swap or something.
Like it makes sense when he meets like other famous chefs, you know.
Yeah.
But like, just sometimes he gets the most random people that like, why Tony? Why? I remember one episode he got a bunch of like random. He got a porn star once. And I was just like, what? I don't know.
Oh, the one where he's talking about like, it was like the whole porn themed episode about like food, like
food
dirty
porn.
Food porn. Yeah. Oh, that was awesome.
Very awkward theme. Yeah, it's kind of awkward. But the thing is,
very awkward.
I'm really drawn to it because it's weird because it's like a cooking show and it's like a cultural show. It's a travel show, so it's just like, okay, like this interests me. But if I had to break it down, if I was like, oh man, like I really want to get this recipe from like wherever he's looking at right now, like I couldn't because he would be bashing the food to the point where it's like, it's either more appetizing or I don't want to eat it at all because he's just making fun of it to the point where like it's gonna be like, hmm. Well, you made it so unappealing now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You ruined this economy. Like, thank you.
One of my favorite episodes is one where he goes to Montreal. And him and, like, the dudes he's with are just, like, totally, like, drunk. And probably on, like, Quaaludes or something. Like, I have no idea. But they were, like, they were a little more than drunk. Like, you could just tell. And they're like, oh, I wonder what's open late. Let's go find something. And they're just, like, slobbing down, like, poutine. Those weird like French fry and like meat gravy and like cheese curd. It's basically like French chili fries from hell.
Mm-hmm. They're awesome.
And he's like, oh, this is so good. Just like eating it like a dog off the plate. Like, god damn.
It's like that Patton Oswalt joke about the KFC famous bowl.
Yeah.
Can this bowl play this Mortal Coils It Will End in Tears album while I eat it?
Thing is, I'm just like, this show, it should be like a, if Anthony Bourdain was like a younger, fitter guy, it'd been funny. If like, this guy deserves to get his ass kicked sometimes of going to places and making fun of the people.
So like, to their faces most of the time?
Yeah. I'm just like, they can make this like a really cool reality action show where Anthony Bourdain just gets drunk and like he goes there and asks for free food and gets drunk and then just insults the chef and then fights him.
Anthony Bourdain fighting around the world?
Or like, who's that big guy from Cooking Mission, like that Cooking Impossible show?
Oh, Robert Irvine, that's my boy. Oh
my god, that guy scares
Chef
me.
Robert, you burnt my butter. Now you die.
Yeah, so that's what I've been up to.
Awesome. Did you see Walking Dead, Chris? Or
oh yeah, always watch. Yeah. That's my Sunday religion.
So you guys want to talk about the season finale?
I suppose.
So, what'd you think, someone?
I kind of like remember the comic being a little bit different at this point.
A little bit different.
Just a wee bit.
Yeah, just I was like, wait a minute, I didn't study the first part of the comic. I remember key places they go to, and that's like in my head are like seasons because that's like, you know, they get to a new place and it's like. They explore, they figure out some more humanity, then, like, a zombie shows up.
Mm-hmm.
So once they got to this, like, the CDC building, I was just like, okay, wait, I guess. And it's like, oh, no, like, what are they doing? Now I'm lost. And now, like, this is original, right? Like,
yeah, the CDC never even showed up in the comics, I don't think.
I'm trying to make sure. I'm like, that didn't happen, right? Because I don't own the comics. I just, like, go into Borders and just read it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's starting to blur for me, too. I will definitely give you that much. You know?
Well, I think we're in, like, completely, like, original territory now.
Oh, no, I know. Like, it was starting to really blur, like, midway through this season, but now I'm like, wait, did they? No.
Did that happen? Or...
they didn't do that. Did they?
Man, like, oh, yeah, this, like, the CDC is, like, super well-funded, too, apparently. I love, like...
CDC is, like, the fucking bat cave. Like, that was crazy.
I love their awesome, just, like, skeleton brain analysis thing. And they're and they're super smart, like their AI computer that they have.
The one thing I thought when I was watching this episode, I was just like,
is that it should have been the voice of Kit?
Yeah.
That or did Umbrella Corporation build the fucking building? Because it's just like, I'm just like, basically everything about this reminds me of the shitty Hive.
Yeah.
That's basically what they were trying to do. Like, it has to be, because think of it, there's no other good reason to have it be that, like, technologically advanced just to blow the fucking shit up out of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like the CDC could have just been, like, a nice hospital. And the guy's like, oh, I'm going to blow this place up. It's like, wait, what? Why?
With a fuel air bomb, no less.
Yeah, oh my god.
Oh, I like the cold open flashback that, like, explained how Rick was able to survive in the hospital for whatever, how long, a couple weeks he was there.
The convenient placement of beds.
Yes. Well, I'm sure zombies are too stupid to, like, move the bed.
Dumbass zombies.
Yeah. So, what do you guys think? Any predictions for season 2 or anything you want to see from the comics in season 2 or...
Man, I don't know. I mean, I don't really know what to predict because they're doing so much of their own stuff. Mm-hmm.
I really do want to see that zombie herder girl who, like, knows how to, like, is, like, that survivalist. I want a character like that who just, like, has been her own so long that, like, she can, like, she knows how they think and act.
Are you talking about,
like, every zombie movie has a character like that.
Yeah.
Like, I want one that just, like, blatantly, like, boom.
Were you talking, like, Michonne or whatever her name is, but, like, with the katana?
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, she was a good character in the comic,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to see that happen in the TV show. Like, it's hard to translate that for, like slowly they're kind of leading the audience to, like, accept more and more, like, social zombie norms that happen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like, that's something they should save midway for season 2. But I'm just waiting. You know? I'm just waiting.
I wonder if they're going to do the whole prison thing.
Yeah, that's very vital.
That's like 20 episodes at least, right?
That's a season. That should be, like, a season.
Whole season, just, like, in the prison. Yeah.
Yeah. But, again, I can't, like, figure out where they would go next. Like, they might go to the farm. They might jump to the prison.
Yeah. Well, they also have the whole, like, Shane Rick resolution.
Yeah.
Well, don't forget, next season is also going to be, like,
13 episodes. Yeah.
Like, twice as long.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they could really condense the farm, or the barn, rather, into, like, what, 3 or 4 episodes?
Yeah.
I mean, at least in my opinion, I think they could do that in 3 or 4 episodes and then maybe have it end in the prison or have the most of the season play out. But it's strange that they're not using any of the same writers or anything.
Yeah, they fired all the writers.
I know. What the fuck is that about? It's like, oh, you guys have one of the most successfully, like, received cable television shows in history. You're all fired.
I guess, like,
what the fuck?
I think I was reading, like, I guess, like, Darabont wants, like, complete control over it or something.
Well, that I don't really mind that.
So
by that same token, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Well, I know a lot of people, like, I know a lot of critics are like, oh, the consistency of the writing is not very good from episode to episode or something like that.
I see it, I guess, especially the season finale.
Yeah.
Just not a huge fan of it.
And so, especially like last week, it was like written by Robert Kirkman, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a pretty great episode.
Yeah.
You know what it is? I think it's because the directors or what the production company knew the writers were good enough to like launch the series. They didn't want the writers to go anywhere else. It was like this is their tomb. They're gonna like lock them in like some sort of studio basement and be like, well, thanks for all your efforts. We'll always remember you. Just like no one else could have you.
Like Frank Darabont's like tomb for like he's like the pharaoh or something. Just like locked him in. Jurassic Underworld with Robert Frank Darabont.
So, I don't know. They might get new talent, but like the writers were good. I do admit there certain episodes like I like. Certain episodes were like there's so much drama just like oozing from it.
Yeah,
like all the scenes, and then
it was very eclectic. It was either awesome or like like middle of the road. You know.
Mm-hmm.
The second episode was kind of like that for me, where you're like, oh, you're interested in these things, but it's just like, it wasn't as tense as the first episode. And then third episode picks up, and then like, fourth episode lets down. It's okay. Certain scenes, I think. Just certain scenes got to me.
Absolutely.
Well, it's definitely going to be way better when they get like room to stretch out next year.
Yes, without a doubt.
Instead of, like,
and hopefully
everything in six episodes.
Joins the cast.
Which would be awesome.
Yeah.
I wonder who he would... Do you think he'd play, like, the... I don't know.
He could be someone totally new,
yeah.
Too.
I was saying, he could be, like, the farmer, maybe, or some guy at the prison.
He could be literally anyone.
Yep. Cool. So, Joe, have you watched anything else besides Walking Dead?
Man, my TV, like, exploded 2 days ago. I have a Sony... HD TV, but it's one of the rear projection ones. It's an awesome TV, and I love it, but the fact that it was rear projection made it a lot cheaper and thus a lot more appealing to me. And the only downside to that is that as nice as the picture quality and as consistent as the picture quality is, bulbs blow out, especially when they're used a lot. And because I use this TV for like television, movies, and games, as do the other people in my family. We put a lot of wear on it, as Chris can attest to.
Oh my God.
But, yeah. But, so that basically took my TV out of commission from Saturday until today. So, Friday, I think the last thing that I really watched that was of any real significance or importance would probably be, I got the movie Crazy Heart, with, Jeff Bridges, off of Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Not really sure why, to be totally honest with you.
Are you getting ready for
the
Jeff Bridges Christmas that we're going to have this year?
Yes, the Christmas Spectacular with Jeff Bridges. It had been in my queue for a while, and I heard good things about it, and I guess Elf wasn't available, so they sent me Crazy Heart, but I thought it was a pretty good movie. I mean, there's not really much else to say about it. I mean, it was a pretty cool, like, quasi-Johnny Cash-based, country music movie, and I know that's not really its own like genre of movie, but it was just cool. Like, his character has flaws but is like very likable, and like you find yourself rooting for him. And what I really liked about it is that the ending, and I'm not going to give anything away here, but like it's a very realistic sort of ending. And like if you listen to like his lyrics and like his music and stuff throughout the course of the movie, like it's very fitting. The ending, like, it's not like, oh, everything worked out. It's like, no, this is usually how stuff happens in real life. Like, nobody dies in, like, a car explosion, but that doesn't mean that everything just, like, settles and works out well either. So, it's pretty good. It's not the feel-good movie of the year, but it was definitely a great performance by Jeff Bridges. And, as usual, pretty solid outing from Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was good. It was a good movie. But yeah, other than that, I haven't seen a goddamn thing because of my exploding television.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I did see the Ultimate Fighter finale, which was at best.
I heard it was boring.
And Yeah, it was pretty fucking boring. I mean, Jonathan Brookins, the guy who wound up winning the season of The Ultimate Fighter, like, you know, he's good. I'm not saying I would want to fight him, but he's just not the most exciting fighter in the world, and he's kind of a douchebag when it comes to his, like, heady stoner babble.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's like, man, I feel like I'm in a good place in the universe right now. I feel like I'm going to find out a lot about myself in this fight. I'm like, just fucking fight the guy, son. But on another note, Strikeforce put on a phenomenal card this past Saturday night. Dan Henderson versus Hanato Babaluso Brawl in a rematch from, I forget how many years ago, but at least maybe like 6 or 7 years ago, maybe more than that, actually. I don't know. I'm just going by approximations here, but in their rematch, in the original match, rather, Dan Henderson beat Babalu. And, you know, that was nice, I guess, but it just made sense for them to fight each other now, and it did not disappoint. Dan Henderson may be 40 years old and may have left the UFC, but god damn it, that man is a fucking savage. Like, he is very, very scary.
Mm-hmm.
Just the power he has in his right hand. He calls his right hand, his right overhand knockout punch the H-bomb. Which is it's pretty accurate. I mean, he absolutely destroyed Babalu, but it was a big night of knockouts. Antonio Bigfoot Silva was rocked by Mike Kyle, who's more or less an unknown in mixed martial arts, and took Alistair Overeem's little brother, Valentin Overeem's spot in that fight when he pulled out. So it wound up being Antonio Bigfoot Silva against this guy that basically people were writing off. He's basically like a training partner to the stars. So it's like he helps the people that are very well established to get to where they need to go, but he hasn't really hit it big himself yet. Well, let me tell you, Mike Kyle was fucking up Antonio Silva's shit for the first round, but Antonio Silva is Antonio Silva, and there's a reason they call him Bigfoot. That is a big, scary Brazilian, and as soon as he got on top of Mike Kyle, it was very, very short work. And Semtex Paul Daly, who recently released from the UFC for hitting Josh Koscheck after the fight ended in a rather douchey move, absolutely dismantled Scott Smith, who I like a lot as a fighter. But goddamn, there's a reason they call him. There's a reason they call Paul Daly Semtex, which, for those noobs listening that don't know what it is, it's basically like British SAS's version of C4, and he is explosive. I mean, if you want to see a knockout that's really going to make you go, wow, definitely try to catch this one. Because Scott Smith was running forward, got punched in the face, and just straight up shut off. He, like, face-planted directly into the mat, and that was it. So, very exciting night of fights from Strikeforce. In terms of them catching up with the UFC, I don't think it's as important that they catch up with the UFC as it is that they just focus on providing, like, quality fights, you know? Like, they don't have to knock the UFC into, like, the number two, like, mixed martial arts promotion to be successful. All they have to do is put on good fights that fans want to see that make sense and, you know, not get caught up in that whole, like, oh, we're, like, the minor leagues thing. That doesn't matter. Just keep doing what you're doing and people will watch you. But that's how I feel about it.
Awesome.
I suppose. to the two people who actually give a fuck about what I'm talking about.
Right, so I watched a bunch of stuff last week.
So?
I saw the...
I mean, what did you watch, Zach?
Fuck you, Joe.
I know, I'm sorry.
Who controls the disconnect buttons?
It's true, it's true. It's Zach's birthday, everybody, so
mm-hmm.
Everybody... wish him a happy birthday.
Well,
silently
2 days ago
yourself.
It was Joe. Wink, wink.
Oh, yeah. Wink, wink. Happy belated birthday, Zach.
Yeah.
This is live from Everything Action HQ.
Mm-hmm. So I saw what is confirmed yesterday is the series finale of Terriers, which I'm really upset about. It was the FX private detective show that no one watched.
Yeah, no, I know what Terriers is. They definitely advertise that show the wrong way.
And, well, like, first of all, like, the name is horrible. Because it has nothing to do with Terriers at all.
I know, and it's just like advertisements about dogs. Yeah. I remember watching Louie with Chris back in May, and it's like terriers coming this fall, and we were both like, is this a show about fucking dogs?
Dog
like,
fighting?
What is this shit? Yeah. God damn.
I mean, it's called, like, Private Eyes or something. I don't know. But something...
I know. I heard it was a great show. I haven't seen it, but Lord knows I'll have time to catch up.
Well, like the series finale, like, it sort of, like, wrapped up everything nicely. So, like, it's not too bad that it's not going to have another season. Like, it pretty much concluded, like, everything from the first season. So that was nice. And, like, the last three episodes just, like, ramped up and were, like, awesome. Because there's this whole conspiracy, like, that, like, threatened the entire, like, Ocean Beach, San Diego town that the guys were trying to figure out. And they had some great villains. And Donald Logue is, like, was fucking, like, unbelievable in that show.
Wow, you got me with that one, really?
Yeah, like, he just, like, he should get, like, an Emmy nomination.
God damn, that's a strong... Strong backing
mm-hmm.
from our man Zach.
Well, I remember him in Blade.
Yeah,
like it went from that to like Arrested, Grounded for Life.
Grounded for Life, yeah.
So I don't know. He's one of those iffy actors to me.
No, he's like you should definitely check this out because he's great in it.
I'm and like, not saying I won't hate him, but you know,
just like the back and forth between him and his like his partner is like fantastic. And I was kind of hoping, like, because, like, Sean Ryan, like, created the Shield, like, was, like, a co-creator on the show. So I was, like, hoping maybe, like, he would flex some of his muscle at FX. Be like, I kind of, like, made you guys, so could we get, like, another season of
Yeah, they really did. What the fuck? Him and Kurt Sutter basically built FX.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for those two, and, you know, I know this is a pretty strong opinion to have, but if it wasn't for those two... Specifically Kurt Sutter, but for those two, they'd still be showing fucking reruns of Hulk.
Yeah.
And that's all FX would be.
And, like, they had, like, Tough Man and stuff.
Whatever. they were, like, the fake Spike TV.
Yeah. But, yeah, they still have Justified, so I'm looking forward to that in February. And then they also have, like, that new show coming out in January, Lights Out.
Wow, Lights Out looks very interesting.
Super, like, super gritty Rocky.
Yes, super gritty Rocky indeed. That looks like a very cool show, but, I mean, there's also the final season of Rescue Me coming up.
Yep.
And I'm very curious to see how that plays out. As well as the highly anticipated, by yours truly, fourth season of, in my estimation, one of the best written shows on TV in a very long time, Sons of Anarchy.
Mm-hmm. And season two of Archer is coming up, too.
Yes, in January, actually. Yep. And that is just one of the most grossly underrated comedies on television, like, period. Like, because nobody knows about it. And it's just the funniest goddamn show.
Yeah, so FX has a lot of, like, awesome shows, so I can't really be too mad at them. But, like, Terriers is probably, like, the second best new show of this year. Behind Walking Dead.
It just makes you wish that they did more for, like, they stuck by it a little bit more, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, Rescue Me took a while to warm up, too. Like, that had a very shaky, like, debut, especially because it was, what, like, 2003 or 4?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the fact that they were so heavily focusing on 9/11, a lot of people, I mean, I even remember when I first heard about it being kind of, like, pissed off at Dennis Leary. Because it's like, really, that's the only way you could get a fucking TV show is to, like, have it be based around 9/11, you douchebag. But, like, the more you watch it, like, the better it gets. And they just use that as, like, a jumping off point for, like, a totally unrelated story, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think everything deserves a chance. And without even seeing it, I'll give Terriers the benefit of the doubt. And just the fact that it was on FX, I'll say it at least deserved a second season.
You know, well, it's happened to me twice, I think, this year, because I think this week is going to be, like, the last episode of The Good Guys, too, on Fox, which is another awesome show.
I couldn't bring myself to watch that. I'm not going to lie to you. It looked pretty weird.
if you love 70s cop, like, buddy cop movies, or, like, just, like, buddy cop movies in general, you should definitely check it out.
I guess I do. I guess I love those buddy cop movies.
And Bradley Whitford is hilarious. As Dan Stark.
Yeah, that's what I've... Yeah.
Like, if you only watch, like, one episode, you definitely need to watch the episode where, like, his, like Gary Cole comes on as, like, his former partner, Frank Savage. they both have, like, awesome 70s stashes and just, like, running around in, like, Hawaiian shirts.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, that was TV. And I saw a couple movies over the last week. I saw some really weird – it came on Netflix, I think, 2 weeks ago or last week, Operation Endgame. Either you guys heard the
Oh,
folks?
You watched that?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Oh, no.
So this is...
Isn't that like very disappointing. Everyone was like on break in Hollywood and they're like, well, you want to guys make a movie? We got some time to kill.
Pretty much.
Like everyone's in it.
Yeah. It's super weird because like directed video but it has like a crazy cast. It's got Rob Corddry, Jeffrey Tambor, Adam Scott, Ving Rhames, Maggie Q, Ellen Barkin. Who else is in it? Emily DeRozan.
Zach
Galifianakis. Well, he's in it for like 2 minutes, maybe.
Really? It's really easier to say who's not in it.
Yeah. Like Rob Corddry and Ellen Barkin probably have like the most screen time. Because like everyone else just like is in it for like 5 minutes. It's really weird because like there's like pretty much no plot. Like the plot just exists to like have everyone like shout one-liners at each other and like kill each other with office supplies.
Fair enough.
Like, if you want to see like violent deaths involving like paperclip removers and like bookends and stuff, or like paper shredders, like this is the movie to watch. And I think Rob Corddry is probably like the best part of the movie. He's full in like asshole mode. Like it's like if Lou from Hot Tub Time Machine like was like a covert agent or something.
Nice.
He's got like, a bunch of great one-liners. Like at the beginning of the movie, like he's trying to get into like their, it's called the factory, which is like the agency they work for. So like the guys like running the door like always like fuck with him like and lock him out. So he gets like super pissed off and he just starts yelling at them. And he's like, I'm gonna peel your skin off and dry it off in the sun and turn into a condom and fuck your mother with it. So, I mean, if you want to see like
on a lighter note though.
If you want to see like a bunch of like great comedy people do like an okay movie, like and you have Netflix, so it won't cost you anything. I would definitely say check it out. If you're a Rob Corddry fan, especially check it out.
Yes,
but it's really weird. Then I also watched The Last Airbender with Riff Raxx last week. That movie is. That's the worst movie I've seen this year. But the Riff Raxx were great for it.
Oh, they always are. Those guys are fucking brilliant.
They make like at least like 5 references to The Room. like someone will say a line, it's like, you are killing me! You are tearing me apart, Lisa! And they do like a bunch of, like, because everyone says like, half the people in the movie say, like, Avatar, and half the people say, like, Avatar. So they're like, is it Avatar or Avatar? And they're like, this is, like, that classic moment in Over the Top when they couldn't decide if it was Lincoln Hawk or Lincoln Hawks. So they make references to that, and then, like, they're constantly doing, like, line. Because people are just, like, staring blankly at each other. And, God, that movie just, like, all the dialogue is pretty much, like, people explaining shit. Like, there's nothing, there's no dialogue, it's not like explaining something that happened or something that's happening on screen right at that moment. So, and then, like, another thing the Riff Raxx has to do, like, someone will say, is like, he died in the battle of blah, blah, blah when the robot monsters attacked or whatever. And, like, one of the guys will be like, wow, I'm glad you didn't show us that because that sounds, doesn't sound interesting at all. And they make a bunch of, like, happening references and stuff. So it's, I would definitely recommend, like, the only way to watch that movie is with Riff Raxx. And then...
I wonder how many times they watch that movie to, like, make half those jokes, you know? That's...
I think I read the...
That's dedication.
Like, probably, I think, like, 10 times, I think, they watch it or something, at least.
Ouch.
Yeah. Well, can you imagine, like, watching some of, like, the Mystery Science Theater movies, like, 10 times without them? Like, Manos the Hand of Fate or something?
Oh, God.
Yeah, that is...
Final Justice. Let's watch that without their fucking tracks. Good God.
That movie... Oh, my God, that movie's... It's like a horrible cycle. Just like,
yeah.
John Baker goes to a bar, gets in a fight, and gets arrested, and like gets released from jail, and says, "They like don't get into any more trouble." And he gets into more trouble.
I'm warning you.
This is your last warning.
I'm telling you for the last time.
Yeah. Oh, John Baker.
Yes.
And then the last movie I watched last week was The Director's Cut of Watchmen, which I got in Blu-ray from Amazon for like $10.
Well, now, was that 4 hours or 5 hours?
3 hours.
Oh, 3 hours.
Yeah.
Okay, my bad.
And I really like that movie, but like I'm not exactly sure like what they added. And I know like two of the big scenes they added, but like you can't really tell. Like I think there's like a bunch of like smaller stuff they added, but the two big things they added was like the death of Hollis Mason, who was like the original Night Owl, which it makes no sense in the movie. There's some like some random like gang members are like, "Hey, you know that dude, the Night Owl, who like beat up some of our guys a couple years ago? He lives over there, man. Let's go beat him up.
Go beat the fuck out of him."
They do, yeah. Then like,
yeah, that's the version I saw, and it really took me out of the movie. I was like, "Well, that was really sick."
Had no context for it.
I know.
And
it then, just like, sort of like happens.
And like Night Owl 2 like sees it like in the bar, like he sees a report about it, and he like beats the fuck out the one of the gang member guys.
The nearest. Like weird Japanese guy.
Yeah.
Japanese,
and like,
I don't know, weird Japanese gang.
And he's like, "I'm gonna kill all of you." And then like, that's it. That's like only resolution for that. Like they never do anything else with it. "I'll be coming back for you guys after the movie's over, because we're not gonna be able to show it.
There's not a film in the camera.
I'm gonna leave it up to the audience to decide what I do to you."
Yeah. And like, I think the other thing was like they had like the scene where like Ozymandias is talking about like Alexander the Great, because people were like, what is the deal with this guy? So they have like that scene, but then like later in the movie it's all about Ramses still for some reason. Like he has all the Ramses, like the Egyptian books and like Egyptian stuff in his office, and like the pastor for his computer is Ramses too. So like it makes no sense.
It really doesn't.
And then, like they never like, they still don't explain like where his cat comes from.
Can you, like, make up something? In the comic, they explain that he's a genetic, like, modified thing.
But the movie's just like, "I have a cat now."
Very well.
Mm-hmm. But, like, yeah, Jackie O'Haley is still fucking awesome in that movie.
"I'm not trapped in here with you. You're trapped in here with me." And he throws the fucking oil in the guy's face.
Yeah.
Oh, that was ballin'.
And, like, when he, like, ties the guy's arms to the jail cell. So he's like cut. They had like cut through the guy's arms.
Oh, that was so hot.
It's like, "I'm up 1-0.
Yeah, dude. He really. I have to say, he really saved that movie.
Yeah.
Like he was the only saving grace about that movie.
He and Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Yes.
Because Jeffrey Dean Morgan's great as the comedian.
I know. I did not like that movie as much as I wanted to.
Yeah, like if you watch it, like. There's just horrible, horrible lines in it, and, like, pretty much...
I know.
Like, acting is pretty much terrible from everyone except who's not Jackie O'Haley or Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
I know, and it's just such, like, poor pacing and everything, too. Mm-hmm. Like, I hate to say it, but I think Alan Moore was right when he said that it's unfilmable. Like, it's not that it's not able to be filmed, but it's just such a bad idea. Like, that would have been a great, like, HBO series.
Well, I think,
you know? Or even, like, a DCU animated movie, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Like, if they had done something on HBO like they did with the Spawn animated series, that would have been awesome.
Well, I think if they just, like, trimmed it, like, made an adaptation instead of, like, a slavish, like, film version, which is, like, every panel from the comics in the movie. Like, if they, like, maybe, like, made it into a – it sort of work better as a movie –
yes.
Because there's, like, there's, like, super long, like, 10-minute sequences, like, people talking to each other. that you probably could just, like, cut out and stuff. Yeah. Or, like, cut down, like, the whole, like, when Dr. Manhattan and Silk Spectre go to Mars and shit and, like, all that stuff. And...
visually, it's
absolutely.
So awesome in this
movie. Oh, yeah, visually, it's awesome.
Visually, it's fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. Let's be serious. Like, it's very cool. But... I don't know, man.
Super weird music choices in that movie, too.
Yes.
Like when they're leaving Mars and all of a sudden it's like, all along the watchtower. What does this have to do with
that? Yeah, that was just them saying, okay, well, this is a WB movie and we have full access to the WB, like, music catalog, yeah. So we could use whatever songs we want. And he's like, oh, I like Hendrix. Oh, yeah, let's do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but... The title sequence is still probably one of the best title sequences ever made.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, I can't really. Can't really fuck with that.
And Maximum Movie Mode is fucking awesome too. Like Zack Snyder shows you walks into the screen shows you all the different crap going on. Hmm. There's a timeline that shows the alternate history and our history like comparison.
It's pretty cool, actually.
And then there's Zack Snyder will walk in and show you here's the comic panel and here's the screen from the movie. Let's compare them.
Great.
So, yeah, I still like it, but it's definitely way too long and terrible acting and stuff like that. So, I can see why it bombed. So, yeah, that's it for what I was watching last week. So, let me get to news. Thank you, Jeff. Is that like satellites like people using?
Yes. It was that and lasers happening simultaneously.
That was the sound of fiber optics.
Yes.
So, a couple of video game, movie video game news. Over the last week. First up was the trailer for the Back to the Future game that's coming out in a couple weeks from Telltale Games. So either you guys check that out?
Not yet.
Okay.
I have not. But I'm very intrigued by it. I'm actually waiting for the Video Game Awards because that's where it's going to officially premiere or whatever.
Well, it was on Game Trailers TV, which is what it premiered on.
Like I said, it'll officially
premiere.
Saturday.
It's going to be on PS3, Joe, so you can check it out.
That's right, I can. My God, you're right.
I don't think either of you guys have played the Sam Max games, right?
No, but I've heard very good things about it, believe it or not.
Oh, they're great. Especially the last season. Which, they had a whole the first, 10 minutes of, one of the episodes was, Sam, walk around, talking noir, because Max got kidnapped. So you're just going around grabbing people by the collar and just you can threaten them, compliment them or noir them. So you go up to people I've never seen a darkness as black since I sucked into my own soul. And the guy's are you okay, Sam?
You're smooching with my brother, see? It's what? Slaps him, you silly dame. Listen to me.
It's we're all just cockroaches and God is the exterminator.
Oh, God. That's brutal. God. You're a bunny.
And a dog.
Yeah, chill.
I didn't really watch the TV show when it first came out.
Oh, the TV show is awesome, too. God.
Yeah, I weighed it.
If you watch it now, it's just there's so many, puns and stuff that kids will never, ever understand. And, references to things. But anyway, the Back to the Future game, it's going to have...
Yes.
Christopher Lloyd's going to voice Doc Brown, which is awesome.
Nice.
And they got a pretty good Michael J. Fox impersonator to do Marty. And I think they're going to do six episodes for the season. And the first one is Marty has to go back to the 30s and rescue Doc because he got into trouble.
Oh, Doc.
Yep. So that's pretty much it. Showed Marty getting in DeLorean and punching in 30s and Doc telling him you'll figure out what you do when you get here, Marty. Whoa. So I'm definitely excited about
that's
that.
Pretty
yeah.
badass.
And They're also, like, Telltale's also making, like, Jurassic Park games, which I don't know when they're coming out, but...
That's a very interesting idea.
I think this...
I always felt that the Jurassic Park franchise was very, very grossly misrepresented in video games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had one cool Jurassic Park game, and it was for Sega.
Oh, like the top-down one where, like, you're Dr. Grant?
No, that was SNES.
Okay, yeah.
That one.
Yeah.
It was that was terrible. I'm talking about the one for Sega that was basically like a side-scrolling game.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where
you play as Grant or the Raptor.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That was very cool. And I can remember seeing ads for that in like comic books at the time, where it was like, play as a human or as a dinosaur.
I played the shit out of...
And everyone was like, whoa, radical.
I played the shit out of like the Jurassic Park 2 on Super Nintendo. The chaos continues.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is pretty much like, yeah. It was like Contra, pretty much.
Yeah.
I unfortunately rented the Lost World for the PS1.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. No.
Where you play as, like, Julianne Moore.
It was like...
Or, like, play a tiny dinosaur.
Yeah, I remember playing as, like, you had to play as the copy for, like, 5 levels or 10 levels. The whole beginning of the game was, like, playing as a copy.
Now, Chris, was that better or worse than Dino Crisis in Space?
That was worse. At least Dino Crisis in Space, like... Dino Crisis 3 was, like, this horrible, like, idea that space dinosaurs will... It's like, Dino Crisis 3 was the predecessor to Dead Space, because instead of zombies, they got eaten by fucking, like, space T-Rexes.
Space dinosaurs.
I couldn't explain the plot, because I never beat in it. I was just like...
There's no plot. You're in space, there are dinosaurs. Do with it what you will.
I bought it, like, on a cheap... sale during a GameStop, like, inventory sale, so I was like, you know what? Just the fact that I own Space Dinosaurs, the game, like, I just, like, I'm complete.
Yeah.
So...
I just don't want the Jurassic Park franchise to ever go into space.
Well, you guys...
Funny you should mention that.
You guys remember, like, the crazy, like, scripts that are rumored were coming out, like, they're training the Velociraptors to use guns.
Oh, God.
It was crazy.
They're sending the Raptors back in time to kill Castro in the 50s.
Oh my God, there was like a PS3 game that was like, it was like, you like end up on this island, like dinosaurs just like warp in from time. I think it was like Dino Hunter or something.
I'm sure it was.
There's an awesome Giant Bomb quick look of it. It was just like, you're just walking along and all of a sudden like, a Velociraptor jumps out of a time bubble.
Oh no. Was that a time bubble?
Yep. So, other video game news. Christopher Nolan was talking about Inception last week during some interview. I think it's like Variety or something, maybe. But he was talking about like the ending was like real. Apparently, like that's his opinion, or like that's what he set out to do was like make the ending real. And he also said that
real as in like he's in
like,
reality
yeah,
and he's not
like,
dreaming.
Yeah, like he's in reality and not dreaming. Yeah.
Way to speak in riddles, Chris. Jesus Christ. Christopher Nolan, you son of a bitch. Just give us a straight answer.
And, another thing you mentioned was that they want to make like an Inception video game.
Boo.
So, Chris, you're a game designer.
Game programmer,
yep.
Game designer.
So,
all-around gamer.
What would you, how would you make an Inception game? Or do you think Inception would work as a game?
It'd probably be like a meta game.
You could just break your TV. You should turn it on and just break your TV and make you really sad.
Like, I put
you're
a
like,
game
God
that...
damn, why did that happen to me?
It's like a blue screen death just comes up.
No, no. To make a game like that, to make it think like his movie did, because, like, you know, the first time I watched that movie, I had, like, lucid dreams. I had a really, like...
Giggity.
I know I'm dreaming, but I can control the dream kind of dream.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, I figure you want... That was like the movie experience. The game experience should be like a game that doesn't work. And so you think about how it would work in your head. And you don't actually play it. You just put the game like a disc in your disc tray. And just it loads and it never works. Like it just keeps
okay.
on like, continuing.
It just, I think you should put it in and just goes, bah!
Chris, you're fired.
That's the
you're
worst
not programming
game.
This game anymore.
It's the easiest game I can make.
How dare you?
They should just make it like Psychonauts or something.
Like, I remember there was, like, that hype before the movie came out. There was that, like, dumbass iPhone or, like, app game.
Oh, yeah.
You download Inception in the app so you can play the game to unlock the crime scene within. I was like,
the secrets of the movie.
Your mind is the scene of the crime.
On your iPhone. God damn it.
I don't know who you'd play as in the game. Would you play as, like, another kind of break-in guy, like Leonardo DiCaprio? Or would you
I think you play as Leonardo DiCaprio's dreidel, and it's just a big dreidel-spinning mini-game.
It's like Move Connect Wii. We have to, like, keep the top moving.
Yes.
No, I would make a game based on you, like, trying to find your totem. It's just, like, spinning a dreidel or, like, dropping dice or like, that chess piece thing where it's weighted.
Mm-hmm. I think
she doesn't even use it in the movie. She just makes it and never uses it.
Yeah. Well, I think realistically, it's going to be, like, a third-person shooter or something, probably.
Most likely. I just hope
way
it doesn't
to kill
go
the
game.
Dream.
It's probably going to be, like, a prequel, maybe, or something, like all the jobs they pulled before the last one in Inception.
Yeah, it's probably going to be random, like,
break this
IJs as a Inception jobs as a TV's Leonardo DiCaprio.
Maybe
probably. I just don't want it to go the way of Enter the Matrix or the Matrix Path of Neo, where they try to.
They gotta have like zero G fights and shit like that.
Yeah.
I think it'd also be kind of cool if, like, you could play, like, Tom Hardy and, like, walk out to people and, like, turn into them. Be, like, Splinter Cell or something. You drug them and, like, drag them off and, like, become them.
That'd be kind of interesting.
I remember he did a shitload of work in the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
The part where, like, you start, like, oh, man, like, let's make a movie based on his character, not Leo and his weird kids thing.
Like, yeah, like, Tom Hardy and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, just, like, have them running around.
Yeah, with DiCaprio's character, be like, uh-oh, it's time for a baggage minigame. We have a flashback of a broken marriage, and you have to play through this fight.
It's just like Marion Cotillard shows up like, you stupid!
Yeah. Where were you last night? I told you, I was incepting the Prime Minister of Canada.
We're not...
Always with the incepting!
This is not real, it's a dream! Ah!
You never incept me anymore. Dude, you know what would be sick, though? Remember how for PS1, Metal Gear Solid, how in the fight with Psycho Mantis, they had all that weird shit happen where, like, if you had other Konami game saves on your memory card, yep. Psycho Mantis would be like, oh, I see you play Castlevania. And you're like, what? Like, that freaked the hell out of me.
Or like
that would be very cool if they used, like, if the game needed internet access, where it's like, oh, I see you are a big nerd, or something like that. You know, it's like, I don't know, just something where it, like, fucks with your head a little bit.
Or like, you're playing the game, and then it goes into another game.
Yeah, like, it just, like, goes into, like, Assassin's Creed 2.
What?
Like, what the shit? What am I doing? And then it just brings up your most recent, like, streaming porn. And you're like, no, this is a very bad time for this to happen. I'm surrounded by family. It's Christmas morning. Damn it, I've been incepted.
Inception!
You're like, Inception! Yeah, exactly. Then it just ends. Inception. Just says it across your screen. How do you get the high score in that? Nobody knows. Nobody knows.
You have to go deeper to get the higher score.
You have to keep letting them pull up
your... On paper, Inception the game sounds like a virus. It sounds like things that would break your video game console, your TV.
Red ring.
Go outside.
Your Xbox just got incepted. Mm-hmm. Go play in the street.
All right, so moving on. Speaking of Tom Hardy and Christopher Nolan and stuff, there's some crazy Dark Knight Rises rumors over the past couple weeks. Like, there was, like, they said Heath Ledger's Joker's going to show up as, like, a CG thing, just, like, quick, to show you that he's still there.
I debunked that very, very quickly
and
sternly on Everything Action's Twitter page.
But I think, like, the most solid, like, rumor was that they're looking to Batman Prey as, like, the possible inspiration for this Dark Knight Rises.
Yes, they are. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Batman Prey and maybe asking yourself, what's a Batman Prey? Batman Prey is a 5-issue story arc from very, very early in the Legends of the Dark Knight series, from the early 90s in the DC Comics lure. Basically, it was DC's way of capitalizing on both the success of Batman Year One from a few years earlier, as well as the success of Tim Burton's first Batman film, because it basically created an interest in, like, Batman's early years again. You know, I mean, between Year One and then making a movie that basically told, like, Batman's origins, kind of, or at least started out with him not being, like, very well known, there was a demand for, you know, seeing Batman's earlier years. So the only real criteria that they gave to the people that worked on it, and there are some great fucking people that, you know, had runs on Legends of the Dark Knight, like Klaus Janson and Doug Monick, like really, really, really great talent involved here. The only real criteria was it has to take place within the first, like, 3 years, give or take, really years one through, like, I guess, two or three, most of the stories take place of Batman's crime-fighting career, where he's still basically, like, a myth, and, like, some people believe that he's real, some people, you know, believe that he's just made up. And it's very exciting, because it gave them free rein, because it's not, like, part of the Batman canon. It's just like, okay, this isn't, like, officially part of, you know, the Batman continuity, but if it's good and people like it, then run with it. Having said that, this story arc is basically about at its core, it's about the relationship between Jim Gordon and Batman in the very most heterosexual of ways. It's about the relationship, like the trust between the two of them, as well as the city's perception of Batman. Like, if his methods are, like, acceptable, or if it's something that, like, as long as it gets results, they're willing to look the other way, and if he's undermining the police. Like, if the very existence of Batman, like, discredits the value of the Gotham City Police Department. So, if I may explain very briefly what happens in Prey for everyone who's unfamiliar with it, there's a Batman task force that's created by the mayor of Gotham City to bring the Batman to justice. And heading up this task force is Lieutenant Gordon, who I guess if they go this direction for Prey, obviously it's going to be Commissioner Gordon. Mm-hmm. But he still has to work under the mayor's authority, so they could make him the head of this, like, Batman task force. And their sole objective is to just bring him to justice, to find him, set traps for him, all this sort of weird crap. But because of the events of Batman Year One, and really because of the events at the end of The Dark Knight, in which Batman, like, saves Jim Gordon's family and basically solidifies himself as, like, good, like, as a hero in Commissioner Gordon's eyes, Jim Gordon goes into it saying, okay, this is basically just going to be, like, not very serious, and on paper it's going to look like we're doing a lot of work, but we're not really going to try to catch him. The mayor brings in Dr. Hugo Strange, who is a psychiatrist who's super duper fucked up, but is incredibly intelligent, is incredibly manipulative, and is obsessed with Batman. Like, he's absolutely obsessed with the idea of someone who can be, like, the full human potential of, like, physical and, like, mental, like, near perfection. Like, he's just obsessed with that idea, and he's obsessed with finding out, like, not just who Batman is, but, like, why he is who he is. So he basically, throughout the course of the comic, creates all these, like, media campaigns against Batman. He, at one point, gets one of the members of the Batman task force, Sergeant Max Court, I think his name is, to be this vigilante called the Night Scourge, who, I know it's a very, very stupid name, but he basically gets him to go and, like, murder criminals and make it look like Batman's the reason for, like, the vigilante uprising. But the real issue here is that it deals with a lot of things that, and I'm done basically like summarizing the comic at this point, but it deals with a lot of things that, it deals with a lot of issues that the Dark Knight raises perfectly. First of all, right off the bat, Batman's on the run. Like, the whole driving force behind this story is that they're trying to bring, or the mayor, at the pressure of the city, wants Batman brought to justice. And there's that whole, like, dynamic, again, between Batman and Jim Gordon, and Jim Gordon balancing, you know, this friendship with this man that he doesn't really know, but he trusts fully, and with his duties as a police officer. So there's, like, that balance going on. But it also deals with Batman asking, like, well, what are my real motivations for doing this? Like, am I just a megalomaniac who's, like, obsessed with making the cops look bad? Like, am I just, like, obsessed with the challenge of, like, fighting a war that I can't win? Or, like, am I really doing this for the right reasons? There's a lot of stuff that deals with, like, it's not explicitly stated that it's Scarecrow's hallucinogen, like the fear toxin, but something just like it is in it. And I would not be surprised if Scarecrow shows up again in this movie. Catwoman is in the introduction of Catwoman actually takes place in Batman Prey, and it's perfectly done. She really is just a cat burglar, and like with sightings of her and like, I don't know, all these reports of like burglaries and stuff, and the fact that she dresses up like a fucking cat. They basically just group her and Batman together as a team, saying that, oh, Batman's like a psychotic criminal and Catwoman like works for him. So that sets up their like rivalry and could set up, I guess, the initial meeting between Batman and Catwoman. Like, this really is like, you could adapt Batman Prey into a screenplay and it would be a perfect sequel to The Dark Knight. That's just my opinion, but I think that with Christopher Nolan and his team, especially with David Goyer and Christopher Nolan, like planning out the story, and then Jonathan Nolan, who wrote the screenplay for The Dark Knight, writing the screenplay for this. I mean, they have such great material to draw their original story from, just as they did in The Dark Knight with the Man Who Laughs, that Batman story. They drew so much of the Joker's attitude and the events of the movie and just the general dynamic between Batman and the Joker from that book without making a straight-up adaptation of it, that it made The Dark Knight its own thing while at the same time staying very true to the comics. Like, it doesn't have to be a Zack Snyder, like, panel-for-panel adaptation for it to work. But I think it's a very, very good jumping-off point. And if it is true, I'm even more looking forward to The Dark Knight Rises. But, like, how do you guys feel about that, though? The fact that, like, it's someone who maybe isn't as well known. Like, it's someone like Hugo Strange. Like, even though he's very cool and, like, very fucked up and very well done in this comic, like, even to the point where, like, he makes his own bat suit and, like, it just sort of looks like Batman's, but it's not near, it's not, like, anywhere close to it.
Yeah.
Like, it just looks like a Batman Halloween costume. But he, like, starts running around on rooftops and, like, almost falls, and he's, like, I feel like completely omnipotent and like all powerful. Like, I feel like a creature of the night when I wear this. And then he almost falls and like he has to pull himself back onto a roof and he's like, oh my God, I almost died. He's like the thrill of it. Like, I understand why he does this. So like, it's kind of cool because it makes Batman question like if he's really doing it because he's pissed off about his parents dying and because he never wants it to happen to anyone again, or if it's because he's so empty as like a human being that, like, the only way to validate is his existence is by, like, being the best at everything. It's just, it's very, very strange.
Now, you gotta think this. Since Batman is forever gonna be a superhero kind of movie, like, there's no, like, he can't really...
What do you mean? Nothing.
Well, you know, the theme of it being a superhero movie is with certain architectures and, you know, certain ways that we have to present super. It's really hard to have a Batman movie be like this breakdown of a character. You know, like, it's like, the thing that Dark Knight, everyone loves about Dark Knight is that there's a charismatic villain, you know? And you can see, like, the copycat of that in, like, most movies today of, like, in Iron Man, they had Sam Rockwell's character be this charismatic, like, villain type guy. Or he was, like, sleazy, but they try to push for it as a boundary of trying to be near, like, the Joker. And
I suppose I could see that.
Yeah, and they try to do it for, what's another superhero movie that came out? I feel like now, because the Joker character works so well in Dark Knight, other movies are kind of copycat that. Mm-hmm. And they can't continue that with Hugo Strange, because then there's just like any villain that in the Batman universe that isn't like the Scarecrow, who was like legit villain, and or Ra's al Ghul, who was like a serious guy, and then they had the charismatic psychopath, and then they can't have Hugo Strange, who's like this, you know, Dr. Phil.
What you need to do is figure out why you're mad that your daddy died.
Yeah, like that's the first thing people are gonna think as like the mass public. Like you're a diehard fan, Joe, so like that you understand like any character they throw in, as long as they make it like grounded to reality, not just some sort of fantasy villain who just
I dabble in Batman.
I'm just thinking from like a person who like I like Batman. I know a little bit more than the average person, or mm-hmm. a little bit less depending on which comic book era and which like character.
Right.
I'm pretty sure I've learned most of my history through you. So
this is
true. I understand like certain. It's like if you played Arkham Asylum, that's your basic like recap of certain villains that like it's a nod to the fans. It's a nod to like.
Absolutely.
To people who, like, get you interested in other characters and besides, like, the main five villains you've seen in Batman Adventures.
Yes. I agree with you there. I think what you're getting at is that the concern is that someone like Hugo Strange, as cool as he may be, doesn't have, I guess, the marquee name recognition as a villain that Warner Brothers and DC really would be looking for to carry this movie. Because especially in light of The Dark Knight, like there's just so much there's such high expectations for this movie, and not just from the comic book fans, but from like the average Joe who like went and saw The Dark Knight and loved it and thought it was like the best thing ever.
Right.
So mm-hmm. I mean, in a way, like, throwing Hugo Strange as, like, the main villain into this movie, it's definitely a gamble. But here's how I see it. I think Chris Nolan has earned that gamble. You know, I think Warner Brothers definitely trusts him and figures that he can do no wrong. But having said that, I think that this movie is going to be loosely based on Prey. I think there's going to be a Batman task force. I think Hugo Strange will be in the movie. I think that Catwoman will be in the movie because she can certainly be that marquee villain to carry it. I think that the way Prey sets up the dynamic between Batman and Catwoman is very interesting and is very, very, it's very basic, you know? Like, there's a sort of, like, playful flirtation between them, and it's not like he's just out one night and she bumps into him. It's like a third party, which in this case is the media, basically groups them together, and he doesn't really care about it because he knows it's not true, but at the same time, she just wants attention for herself as like the best burglar of all time. So she tries to like find him and confront him about it. So like that could set up an interesting like first scene between them, I guess. I think it will be loosely based on Prey. I don't think it's just going to be Hugo Strange. I think Christopher Nolan has, like I said, a great jumping off point if it is based on Prey, but I think we can expect a shit ton of curveballs and maybe some interesting original stuff from him and his team.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend it as a comic to begin with.
If you can find
like,
it.
Right, it is out of print right now, and I don't recommend spending $100 at the least on it. I was talking with Zach about this right before the podcast, actually. When I said that Chris Nolan and company based a lot of things in The Dark Knight, not necessarily plot points, but some plot points, like the whole the Joker going after the district judge and going after the police commissioner and all this stuff, like targeting the mayor, killing like these high profile murders in very theatrical manners. That all that stuff and the dynamic between Batman and the Joker, like even some of the lines are straight out of The Man Who Laughs. And at the time that it came to light that it was being adapted from that, The Man Who Laughs was also out of print. So when you think about it, like, it's a cool way for Christopher Nolan to be like, okay, what's out there that's really good that people don't readily have access to unless they already own it? So even if it comes out that it's being based on Prey, what are people going to do? They're going to Wikipedia it to get a general idea as to what it's about. Or if you're a little more crafty, you're going to go and download it, and because it's out of print, like, it's totally legal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, having said that, if anyone needs a copy of Prey, let me know. Shoot me an email address on Twitter, and I'll try to hook you up.
Awesome. So, I guess last bit of news, a couple of quick TV bits that came out last week. We got confirmation about the Burn Notice prequel. It's coming out in spring 2011. Sort of like it's the prequel TV movie starring Bruce Campbell.
Woot.
It's going to be sort of like Sam Axe's last mission as a SEAL. I guess he's leading a SEAL team into Colombia. And shit goes down. And Jeffrey Donovan's actually going to be directing it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Has he directed many episodes of the show?
I think he directed like one episode.
Oh, good.
I think he directed like a season premiere or season finale one time. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if Michael's going to appear in it. I'm sure he is at some point, like maybe at the end or something. But
maybe he'll be like alluded to. That'd be kind of cool.
Like, we got this spy working for you. So that should be cool. It'll like fill in the gap between the winter season and the summer season.
Absolutely.
And then the other thing was Dexter got renewed for season 6, which I know, Joe, you and Brian are probably excited about.
Yeah, no real shocker there. It's just news that it was like official.
Yep.
But I don't think that show's going anywhere anytime soon.
A lot of people like it.
For better or for worse, I don't think that show's going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying
stop it, you know,
yeah.
But it might not be a bad idea to maybe take a year or two off between seasons. Because I just don't want to see that show like run out of gas, you know, like I'd rather wait and have it be an ass kicking season than be like, I don't know.
Well, it's probably longer in between than like network TV, right?
Oh, no, it is without a doubt. I'm just saying like. There should be no reason for them to have started episodes in September, right? They started in September, right? Yeah, they did. Thanks.
Just sleeping.
they started episodes in September, so there shouldn't just immediately be a need for there to have new episodes next September. In my opinion, mm-hmm. I don't think it needs to be like, oh, every September, new Dexter. Like, they could hold out a little bit. Like, even if they went September to, like, next January.
Yeah.
I think that would be perfect. It'd be, like, salivating for more Dexter in a totally heterosexual way.
As long as it's not, like, Walking Dead, like, you have to wait, like, a whole year.
God damn, I know. That's going to be, like, that's going to be torture.
And then you got, like, USA, which is, like, oh, 3 months, we'll be back.
I know. USA is like, hey, see you in 2 weeks with new Burn Notice.
What?
Huh? Does it? Why are you even taking it off for a week?
Yeah. All right, so that's it for news this week. So I'm going to get into new releases. The big thing this week is the aforementioned Inception is out on Blu-ray and DVD this week. And I think Amazon has like a pretty awesome. You can get the Blu-ray DVD digital copy pack for like $18.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yep. So definitely getting that. And then
fucking Amazon. They're too good.
Yeah, I know.
They actually sponsor us, which is really cool. We're kind of a big deal, so.
Yeah, they sponsor us. Actually,
JK, calm down, everybody.
It's going to be too late when you hear this, but actually, they had the Tron Legacy soundtrack up today for $4. Holy shit.
God damn.
Holy shit, that is awesome.
$4 for...
It's like 20 Daft Punk songs.
And they're all really good too. Well, yeah. For the most part, they're really good.
Like, I think I listened to one of the tracks called Derezzed. I probably listened to that like 10 times today.
Yeah.
Just this like awesome Daft Punk.
Yeah, god damn. They're very, very talented, mm-hmm. Those Daft Punks.
So also coming out this week is Shrek Forever After, the fourth Shrek movie that came out this summer.
And suppose it final.
It is the final one. And also they're doing, like, of course they're doing the four-movie Shrek box set, too, this week.
Oh, finally.
So you have the whole quadrilogy.
The Shrek quadrilogy.
The Shrek epic.
That's what I want in my stocking. Take notes.
Fuck Toy Story 3 or How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah. It's all about Shrek mm-hmm. Ever After.
Yep.
But they'll release Shrek Begins down the line.
Probably. Like the prequel. Yeah.
Shrek as a baby.
Oh, God. baby Shrek or little Shrek or something. Let's see. Also this week is Restrepo, which is a apparently critically acclaimed like Iraq War documentary.
It's the feel-good movie of the holiday season.
I've heard nothing but awesome things about it. So. Boy Meets World Season 4 is out this week.
Good, finally. Yeah, I've been waiting for season 4 for a while now.
Yep. Gotta complete the collection.
Well, isn't there like 7 seasons?
Of Boy Meets World? I think probably like 10 at least.
Yeah, there's like 17 seasons, yeah. Dude. There's a shitload of seasons. They just started running out of shit to have episodes about at a certain point.
Yeah, and it's like, Mr. Feeny's still there for some reason. He just stuck these 4 kids.
Mr. Matthews.
I'm your college guidance counselor now. It got really weird.
And I love that he was like everything, too.
Yep.
It's like, oh, I need a mechanic. Mr. Feeny.
Well, he was the teacher, and then he was also like the neighbor that gave advice. That
the principal, the neighbor,
that
the best
the episode,
friend.
Yeah.
I think he was like Topanga's gynecologist, yep. Too.
Yeah, the early Boy Meets World is definitely better than like later Boy Meets World too.
Yes, without a doubt.
So also out this week is Alice in Wonderland 3D Blu-ray.
Finally.
Mm-hmm. We can talk about that in a little bit.
yeah, we are.
Also, Kronos is out in Criterion Collection this week. It's the what put Guillermo del Toro on the map.
Mm-hmm.
So like crazy horror Spanish movie.
Isn't a Videodrome?
Yes.
Videodrome coming out this week too?
Yep.
Oh man, Criterion is kicking ass.
Yeah, they had a couple of weird.
Actually, no, not really. They're not kicking ass. They're just releasing Videodrome. So I take that back.
Well, they've had a couple of weird movies lately, but this week's pretty.
Yeah, they released House, which apparently, like all of Netflix, like wants to see that movie a lot worse than I do.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of Criterion Collection quick, have you guys seen Fake Criterion, that Tumblr.com?
No, but that I hear that's really, really funny.
Okay, so great. It's just like they do like super artsy covers for just like Ernest goes to jail.
Oh, my God. Link.
I think the one I put up today was Cop and a Half.
Oh, my God. That used to be my favorite movie. I was like 4, but it was an awesome movie.
And they put like it's super pretentious. It's like. Whoever directed, like, blah, blah, blah's Cop and a Half. It's just, like, some abstract, like, art, like, handcuffs or something, like, in shadow.
Amazing.
And it's awesome. Let's see. Lost in Translation is out on Blu-ray today.
Not your best, Bill Murray.
There's
not your best.
And there's sort of, like, a crazy, like, Lost in Translation moment on Walking Dead. Did you see that? Like, the doctor, like, whispers something to Rick before they leave.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was
borderline. I think it's pretty obvious, like, what he whispered, though. with the blood tests.
Rick, you're pregnant.
Yeah, Rick, you're pregnant.
Yeah.
Some weird zombie, like, the side effect of the zombie plague that men get pregnant now.
Rick, you have zombie AIDS. otherwise known as ZAIDS.
Yep.
Sorry.
Also this week you have Rush Hour on Blu-ray, finally.
Yeah, where the hell has that been?
I don't know.
God damn.
Also on Blu-ray, The Deep, with Nick Nolte and Robert Shaw. St. Elmo's Fire is on Blu-ray, finally.
Oh, good.
I know we've waited for that one for a long time.
Oh, so long.
And then, of course, the big Blu-ray release this week, Half Past Dead. Steven Seagal and Ja Rule.
Way to release movies at the height of their popularity and demand. On Blu-ray. That's a movie that never needs to be on anything but like a Target 4-pack.
I know.
4 movies, 1 disc. It's the only place I want to see Half Past Dead.
That movie's so hilariously bad, though.
I know.
You know the sequel to that?
New Alcatraz.
Yes, Half Past Dead 2. The aptly titled.
And like Steven Seagal just like acting like black. He was just like practicing for like Steve Skull Lawman, I guess, or something, but.
Don't bring that bad juju up in my place, brother.
Yo, baby.
I'll break your fucking trachea.
Yo, baby, we're gonna get out of this, man. We're gonna get out of this.
I'm in too deep. Let's play some dice.
I remember, like, for like the whole first half of the movie, he wears like a do-rag and shit, too.
Yep.
Oh, man. Yeah, I know. He does.
He and Ja Rule are like homies.
God damn it.
And there's just, like, the crazy-ass, like, Tomb Raider Matrix fight at the end where, like, Marsh Chestnut's, like, running around the walls in, like, a bungee cord and shit. And, like, Steven Seagal's, like, shooting at him, and it's just insane. They kidnap the vice president or something and bring her to New Alcatraz.
New Alcatraz.
Yeah. And then there's, like, there's the crazy, like, the warden was, like, El Fuego or something.
Written and directed by Steven Seagal.
Was it?
Sounds like it. Fuck.
It might have been before he took over everything. And started going direct to DVD.
Director of photography.
Steven Seagal. Catering. Steven Seagal.
Yeah, really. Made you guys some Swedish meatballs.
Soundtrack provided by...
You like it.
Soundtrack provided by Steven Seagal and Mojo Priest.
Mojo Priest in the Crystal Cave.
Yes. Featuring the hit.
Sounds like a bad Indiana Jones movie.
The hit single Alligator Ass.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
Where does he find the time to be in the band when he's being a cop?
I don't know.
I think he was one of those kids that just wanted to be, like, everything when he was little. He's like, I'm going to be a Buddhist monk. I'm going to be a movie star.
He's like the reincarnation of Buddha. Have you seen that video?
Yeah. Yeah, like, no, he is.
I'm Buddha. I like people. They can believe what they want, but I'm Buddha, pretty much, you know.
I'm also going to be the next Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
Oh, and I'm going to be a cop.
Yep. And the greatest action star ever born.
Yes, unquestionably.
Mm-hmm.
I love that man.
Oh, Steven Seagal.
So much joy.
I think there's only like
so many. So many broken limbs.
I think there might have been only like 3 episodes of Steven Seagal Lawman this season.
Oh, man. Hey, have you guys seen the trailer for like his like new show that hasn't been picked up by anyone but is like in the can and just needs like a channel to be on?
No.
Oh, my God. Really?
No.
I need to link that on Everything Action's Twitter. It's horrible. It's basically like, what if they took Steven Seagal Lawman, but like put him in charge? It's like they combined Steven Seagal Lawman with like Blade Trinity. Except he's not fighting vampires, even though he's done that.
Oh my God, yeah, that movie's horrible.
Against the Dark.
Which,
against the Good.
You think it would be good too, because it follows the Steven Seagal is formula.
Yes, but yeah, this show is basically just like him as like a loose cannon, but completely zen.
It's like
near mythical.
It's like a scripted show.
Oh, it's a scripted show. God. It's basically like he just goes around and does whatever he wants as a cop, but he's in charge of like a ragtag group of like misfit police officers that are on like a special force. It's basically Steven Seagal Lawman combined with Blade Trinity combined with Hawaii Five-0.
Oh my god.
And then with like a sprinkle of like CSI. It's not, because it's like, you don't smell that? It's like, smell what? Powder.
So, as long as they have like,
and then it just cuts to the next scene. It's like, what the fuck? Like, what is that reveal?
As long as they have like Seagal vision, where just like, vroom, he takes off his sunglasses and like just zooms in.
Synchronization complete. you are now in sync with Jefferson Parish, Louisiana.
Oh god,
I know where all the vantage points are now.
Anyway, we should probably get to our special feature before we talk about an hour of Steven Seagal. Which we could do.
Christmas podcast.
The Steven Seagal special. But actually,
25 Seagal.
Yes. We should have like a Steven Seagal month or something.
Every month is Steven Seagal month at Everything Action.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, our actual special feature this week is... that it is the 20th anniversary of Edward Scissorhands, so we're going to talk about all Tim Burton movies. From the early awesome ones to the later not-so-awesome ones.
Yes.
So why don't we start right from the beginning with Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
What a classic.
It is.
That movie is beloved.
Mm-hmm.
Was that before or after Batman?
Before.
Which would explain, don't get me wrong, why he got the Batman gig.
Yeah, well, that and Beetlejuice.
Yeah, oh, undoubtedly.
Mm-hmm. But just, like, I don't know how you pick a scene, like, pick a scene from Pee-wee's Big Adventure, because they're all classic.
That's true.
Like, The Breakfast Machine.
Best opening to a movie of all time. That gave, you know how much hope that gave, like, a generation of kids?
Mm-hmm.
That's why we have Windows 7, because of that scene. It's because someone's trying to get computers and, like, gears to build breakfasts, and this is just as close as they've gotten.
And a great cameo by Mr. T Cereal in that scene, too.
I forgot about
Mr.
that.
Mr. T's Tease.
Teaming up with Mr. T Cereal.
Yeah. Mr. T!
Eat your cereal, fool!
And then, of course, the biker bar scene with tequila.
Yeah. Oh, Pee-wee.
he's like, excuse me, I'm on the phone! He knocks over all the bikes.
There is not nearly enough talking furniture in that movie, though.
I know. And no Cowboy Curtis or...
or Jambi, what the fuck? God damn it.
I also love the scene where like he's like calls everyone in to like explain why his bike's missing, and it's like, Exhibit Q! Exhibit Double Z! And of course, like the asshole like bully. Who's like
a, that fat friend?
Yeah.
That fat neighbor guy, or where he is.
Well, I think he was also the also one of the bullies in Never Retreat, Never Surrender.
Oh my god.
Remember that, Chris?
Oh my god.
He was earlier. Can you imagine that? You go from, like, a bully guy who picks on, like, this weird black kid in No Retreat, Never Surrender, to, like, you're like, a full-fledged bully in a Pee-wee movie?
Yeah. The first Pee-wee movie.
God first damn, movie. Never Retreat, Never Surrender. What a cinematic A-bomb that was.
That movie put, like...
hair on my chest.
The spirit of Chinese, like, martial artist Bruce Lee, like, 3 years back. Because that movie was made in, like, the early 80s.
It was, like, 81, man.
Yeah, so it's, like, less than 10 years after Bruce Lee's death. And then just, like, insult.
The ghost of Bruce Lee's going to train this white kid.
Oh, featuring Jean-Claude Van Damme in tacky suits.
As the Russian...
as silent film star.
Just beating the shit out of, like, 13-year-olds.
Yeah, I know. What a dick.
Oh, God.
It was the 80s, though. That's when kids were, like, adults. It's like, you know what, Billy? You're 13 now. You need to get a job and start supporting this family.
Mm-hmm. Your dad's a useless drunk in a bar.
You know I'm a single mom in a man's world. It's time that you stepped up, Billy. Yep. What would your father say? Where is Dad? That's not important. He was in the Air Force. All those underdeveloped 80s movies. A lost generation of men just in the Air Force somewhere. Or with pictures on a dresser that never get explained. What would your father say?
You know, that kind of raises an interesting question about Pee-wee. Like, where does he get his money from?
Where does he get anything from?
Maybe he invents things, or...
I don't know, man.
He's, like, inherited a shitload of money and just, like, lives...
Well, they never say how old he was either, right?
No.
Okay, because, like, remember, like, the first movie, like, the bike shot girl was, like, hitting on him.
Yeah.
And like, is he supposed to be 12, or he's, like, I don't get it.
Oh, and of course, Large Marge, which scarred a lot of people.
Her face looked like this.
Tell him Large Marge sent ya.
I still get nervous, because I always forget when that actually happens.
Blah, 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 blah.
Exactly. I'm like, oh, wait. Whenever that movie's on TV, I'm like, wait, how bad was it again? Was it scary? No. Oh, okay, there it is. Mm-hmm. Okay, that wasn't too bad.
Yep, so then Tim Burton followed it up with Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Like 4 years later. Oh, no, 3 years later. And, yeah, Beetlejuice is a comedy classic as well.
Yes.
And sort of like, I think that's pretty much like what made like Michael Keaton become Batman. Everyone was like, he was awesome as Beetlejuice.
Yeah, he was great in Mr. Mom.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's weird, because it's like, I would never thought Beetlejuice and Batman would be played by the same guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Beetlejuice is not like a physical character. I mean, he's got some like, he has all these like magic tricks, but he isn't like gonna fight.
He's a trickster.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about this in depth one day on the podcast, but there was actually supposed to be a Batman movie made in, I think, 1984, which was written and was going to be directed by Sam Hamm, I believe, who wound up doing most of the screenplay and creative consulting for the first Batman movie with Tim Burton anyway. But, yeah, there was a development hell Batman through most of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Tim Burton one, which we'll talk about soon, finally got made, but... There was a while where, believe it or not, Patrick Swayze was the top runner to be Bruce Wayne / Batman. So think about that bizarre alternate reality.
It's like the Fringe alternate reality.
I know.
Where they had, like Eric Stoltz actually played Marty Fly and stuff. There's so many awesome little details about that in Fringe. Like, they have, like, instead, like, Superman Reds, like, what was the, like, where Superman became Russian? Was that
Red Sun. Yeah. He lands in Russia had, like, instead of America.
They had, like, Batman Red Sun and stuff like that.
Well, no, they really made that, too, though. That's a real thing.
Well, I think they had Red Lantern. They had, like, Red Lantern instead of Green Lantern and stuff like that.
Yeah, DC went through a weird communist phase because they're like, kids in college like communism. Kids in college like comics. Let's make communist comics. And they're like, wait, no, could we not do this? And they're like, it can't fail.
So, any of your Beetlejuice scenes you guys want to talk about quick, or? I think it's kind of weird, like, it's Beetlejuice, but, like, most of the movie is Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis.
Yes,
see, everyone grew up with the Beetlejuice cartoon.
Yeah, which is...
kind of forgot that there was a live action.
Like, it's even weirder when you watch the movie, because, like, Beetlejuice is a bad guy in Beetlejuice, and it's like, oh, they're friends now.
And he's, like, a super dick, too.
Yeah.
He's not just a bad guy, he's, like, a real bad guy.
Mm-hmm. The cartoon's like... oh, Lydia and him are friends, and then, like, there's, like, Jock, the skeleton, and it's the monster next door.
You know, I'm still pissed to this day that in the NES game I couldn't open the garage door on the first level. I could never figure out how the fuck to do that.
I heard that game was awful.
Oh, it's terrible, but still, that's the point of the thing. I rented it, had it for, like, 4 days from Blockbuster and couldn't get past that first part. Very discouraging.
Mm-hmm.
I did like how that... Beetlejuice is supposed to be this, like, kids movie, except they feature the scene of, like, a whorehouse.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a theme in Tim Burton movies where it's like, oh, your kids will love this.
I think I just love like when like they first meet Beetlejuice and he's like, they're like, what are your qualifications? He's like, well, you know, I studied at Juilliard, got a master's degree. And then I also love like the ending where like he's like completely unleashed.
Yeah, and his like worm form or whatever.
He turns like the merry-go-round or whatever with like the
yeah.
Just Robert Goulet into the stratosphere.
Robert Goulet. Red chips of Spain.
Yeah, so Beetlejuice is great. And then then we get the of course Batman. It was the year after that.
Indeed.
So I don't know. Clap.
Dude, that's not even like fair to say it's a Tim Burton movie. And the reason I say that is because to quote Kevin Smith, when that fucking movie came out, like, you could have, for the trailer, had a guy walk out in front of a chalkboard and write Batman and then just, like, underline it and say, like, summer 1989. And it would have been just as effective as, like, what they actually released. You know? Mm-hmm. Like, there was just so much hype. That was, I believe, that was the most expensive, like, marketing campaign for a movie, like, of all time up until that point. And that, like, they just sunk everything that they had into that movie. So, as much as it is a Tim Burton movie, obviously, and he puts such a, like, you know, undeniable spin on it, I would argue that Batman Returns is more of the definitive, Tim Burton
definitely, movie.
Than Batman. Because with Batman is, I mean, so there are things that they let him do, but then there are things that they're like, listen, fucker, like, why don't you just make the goddamn movie?
And there's something like, there's so much 80s-ness about it, too.
Oh, like the fact that the entire soundtrack is done by Prince?
Yes.
And that none of the songs have to do with Batman? They're all just like B-sides from Prince CDs that never made it? Get the fuck up! You can't play that on the radio.
Or like, Party Man.
Yeah, I guess that's loosely about the Joker. Let's just find a way to incorporate a Prince song into every scene of that movie.
Have you seen, like, his crazy video for Bat Dance?
Have I? I try to watch it once a year. Where it's just, like, hundreds of Bat ballerinas and hundreds of Joker
and like,
ballerinas.
And Prince is, like, Prince is just, like, half Joker, half Batman.
I will say Prince as the Joker did look kind of gnarly.
Uh-huh.
That was kind of cool until he was half Joker, half Batman, which, according to Prince, is a metaphor for sexuality in the late 80s.
Of course it was.
No, Google is a hell of a tool. I was trying to download the soundtrack just to, like, have it and be like, I have this music. And it's like, Prince talks to Rolling Stone about Batman. He's like, yeah, I was going through a lot of stuff back then. Mm-hmm. It's like, it was very cutting edge. Very sexual. I think it said a lot about sexuality. It's like, I think it was supposed to say a lot about Batman, but it didn't.
Another kind of weird thing about Batman, looking back on it, is like Joker, for like pretty much maybe more than half that movie, has like just like regular like skin paint on, like makeup on.
Yeah, that was a cool fucking twist, though.
Yeah.
Because other than like in the 70s, I forget which comic. It's not important, but I mean that was a trick that the Joker had done a few times in the comics as like basically sort of like the reverse of what, you know, they had Heath Ledger do in The Dark Knight and that scene at the parade or whatever.
Yeah.
It was basically just like, oh, Joker in disguise. It's like, you were just speaking to the Joker. OMG. So that was kind of cool that they did that. But yeah, according to Tim Burton, they played with the fact that even the Joker can have an alter ego, just like Batman.
Do you guys still like Jack Nicholson as Joker?
He is the Joker. I'm sorry, Heath, you were great. You know, like, you did a very unique spin on the Joker, but Jack Nicholson is the Joker.
Not Mark Hamill?
No. Oh, man, you know what? Oh, that's really unfair. That's really unfair. I'll put it to you like this. Live action, there is no other Joker but Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
However, every time that I think of the Joker or I read a Batman comic and the Joker is referenced or has a line of dialogue, anything, it's Mark Hamill.
Yep.
So I'm so torn between those two. The image of the Joker with Jack Nicholson as the Joker, to me, is perfect. It's absolutely perfect. But the voice of Mark Hamill as the Joker is also perfect.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of, it's also kind of crazy, like they killed Joker at the end of that movie too.
Yeah, that was a very, very dark ending to a Batman movie.
Have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Yeah.
And also like that, like they had Joker like is the one who killed Batman's parents and stuff.
You know, I was just saying, they took a ton of liberties with that movie. Like they had that just shows you how much fucking creative like freedom they gave to Tim Burton. I mean, rightfully so, because it's great, and I you know, it might be a little dated or whatever, but it's still an awesome fucking movie in my opinion. But yeah, they let him do so much stuff. Mm-hmm. But between the whole Batman basically like revealing himself to the Joker.
Yeah.
You know, like that whole scene at like Vicki Vale's apartment where Joker basically like puts two and two together and is like, okay, I'll see you later. You know, like they just have like a mutual understanding.
Yeah.
You know, and he says this stuff like, you know, let me tell you a story about a kid, a real bad seed. I like him already. Like, you know, this is that like classic like confrontation between them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's that. There's obviously killing the Joker, which first of all, you don't kill the fucking Joker. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You don't kill the villain in a Batman movie. Like much less.
And like, you know, like Batman throws him off the fucking church, like clock tower.
He shoots a goddamn gargoyle to his foot.
Yeah.
And he's like, he knew what he was doing. Yeah. It's not like Batman was like, oh, poop. I didn't mean for that to happen.
Or it's like Batman fans were like, I don't have to save you.
Well, that's just as dickish, yeah. I think. Because it's like, please save me. And he's like, nope. G2G. Like, just like hops out of the train.
Yeah.
Although that's how I want to accept my death, just like Liam Neeson, where just like closes his eyes and just embraces the warm kiss of death.
Yep.
But yes, memorable scenes from Batman, boys? Anyone?
Well, like the museum scene, of course.
I think that's my favorite image of Batman from the movies of all time. Is him crashing through that skylight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was just so cool. Like, I obviously wasn't alive, or like, well, I was alive, but I wasn't, you know,
really.
Yeah, zombie. I was too young to, like, see the trailer, obviously, or, like, appreciate it at the time. But this was before, like, internet leaks and shit like that. You know what I mean? Like, this was the sort of thing where, like, if you worked at a movie theater, you maybe saw the trailer, like, a day before everyone else got to see it. You know?
Yep.
So, and there'd be like speculation in comic shops and shit like that. Like, oh, what do you think's going to be in it? Well, I know a guy who knows a guy who saw a negative like, in a bathroom, you know? So it was the sort of thing where like, that's the first time you see Batman in costume, like a clip of him in costume, you know, like there are pictures in like Entertainment Weekly or whatever, but that was the first image people saw of the live action Batman. And my cousin Dave, who was like, he was a teenager at the time, said that like seeing that preview in the theater, like everyone went absolutely apeshit for that. Because that's just like such an iconic like Batman image. And like that's how it ended supposedly. Like with that and then the Bat logo, obviously. But
yep.
Yeah, that was very cool. There was a nice little nod to that in Batman Begins. In Arkham, when he's falling like through that like cyclone of bats.
Yeah.
That was very cool.
You know, the only other weird thing about Batman, like Tim Burton one now, watching it now, is that it's pretty obvious that like Michael Keaton could not turn his head in that suit.
Yeah.
So it's just like he's doing a lot of like side fighting.
He does a lot of side fighting, he does a lot of back fisting.
Yeah.
He does a lot of like, oh, knew you were there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Oh, you know what else was classic? That alley scene?
Yeah.
That was awesome. Like, the little Filipino guy with, like, the two swords, and he just, like, kicks him in the chest. And then some weird, like, bicycle pedal comes out of his hand. Like, remember that? It's just, like, a little, like, spring that, like, hits him in the chest, like, a little bit harder. Does anyone know what the point of that was?
Wait, Batman had that?
Yeah, Batman just, like, has a little, like, extension of his glove come out.
Okay.
And he, like, hits a guy in the chest.
I don't remember
Like, the guy who's rushing him with the swords.
Okay, he has his own, like, brass knuckles, except, like, they're part of his gloves.
Right, but it looked like the bottom of a pogo stick. Like, it came out of, like, right underneath, like, the palm of his glove. Like, I guess on, like, the wrist, like, where his pulse would be. Like, something just sort of, like, shot out of it. Or, like, not like a projectile, but it, like, popped up from there. And, yeah, it is like a brass knuckle, but, like, why wouldn't you just fucking have, like, the lead shot, like the Dark Knight outfit had? Or just fucking hit him in the head. Like, just punch him in the face. You don't have to, like, hit him in the chest with, like, the bat stick. That sounded very wrong. You don't have to hit him in the chest with the, like, bat spring.
Yeah.
But that was a classic line, though, when they're hanging. It's like, how much do you weigh? It's like, 105 pounds or whatever. He's like, I think you weigh a little more than that.
Is that the one?
It's like, you think?
Is that the one where the Batmobile, like, drove up straight up a wall?
No, that was Batman Forever.
Oh, Batman Forever, okay.
God damn it. I don't know why that needed to happen.
Yeah. All right, so moving on.
And what was next after that? Was it
Edward Scissorhands?
Oh, I'm kidding. Yeah.
So any thoughts about Edward Scissorhands? That was the first Tim Burton and Johnny Depp collaboration of many.
Yes, first of many. And that was Johnny Depp's first, like, starring role, I believe, right?
Well, like, 21 Jump Street before that, but...
Yeah, okay. I have a theatrical, yeah. Like, give-a-shit mm-hmm. role.
Well, Nightmare Before Elm Street.
Oh, no, Nightmare Before Elm Street. I was like, wait, you mean the Nightmare Before Christmas? No, Nightmare on Elm Street, like, he didn't really star in that, though. He was just sort of like...
Introducing Johnny Depp.
Introducing Johnny Depp as boy. Or as Glenn.
Yeah.
Sad that I remember that. But, yeah, no, I know what you mean. I'm just saying, like, even though... He didn't really, like, star in that. He was just sort of in it, and it was his first movie role.
Yeah.
That's true. This was the first time where it was, like, Johnny Depp is...
Crash put him on the map, yeah.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, it was a... I thought he did a phenomenal job in that movie, because think of how much shit he had to convey without really speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was kind of cool, I guess. But a very, very weird movie. Like, is that even...
Super
I always
Christmas
wondered
movie.
If that was ever... Yeah, I always wondered if that was ever based on anything, or if it was just, like... The fucked up imagination
like,
of Timothy Burton.
Right, there was a guy with scissors for hands.
Yeah, like how much LSD do you have to put into your brownie to like come up with that?
I think it's based on like a French story about like a living doll, like a marionette or something. Like it seems like a classical, weird old tale that gets like a modern twist to it.
Wasn't Edward Scissorhands like indestructible too?
He was like a robot. He was like Pinocchio.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
His father was supposed to give him hands,
well,
but then had a heart attack right in front of him.
Well, he said it is basically, like, his Pinocchio. It's not, like, explicitly Pinocchio, but that's what he, like, compared it to.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, the dynamic, at least, between Edward and his, like, creator.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
I didn't get the idea where he got the gothic... costume, like, because you remember before, like, he
yeah, there's, like, the bondage thing. Gear that they used in The Crow, like, 6 years later or whatever. It's the same goddamn outfit, he just doesn't have scissors. I made that connection, like, 2 years ago, and it freaked me out.
The Crow's a big Tim Burton fan.
Yeah, clearly.
Mm-hmm. So, after Edward Scissorhands, there was, of course, Batman Returns.
No, Ed Wood.
No, Batman Returns was before that.
Oh, really?
92, and then Ed Wood was 94.
So
Batman Returns, like Christmas movie, first off. And also, like, super disgusting.
Huh?
Because like, the Penguin is, like, fucking, like, one of the most disgusting villains ever in movie history.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, there's, like, black goo just, like, constantly streaming out of his mouth.
Hang out with penguins? I think that's what happens, right? Don't they do that?
That really bothered me when I was young and I watched that movie. Like that always stuck with me as like really like grossing me out.
Yeah.
Like I wasn't like scared of it, but I was always like, I hate that part.
Just like, am I just like eating fish with his crazy flipper hands?
Yeah, you know, that really shows again that the creative liberties they gave to Tim Burton.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he basically turned the penguin into a half man, half penguin. When really Oswald Chesterfield Cobblepot was just like a portly kid.
Bird fan. He's like an ornithologist.
He's a bird enthusiast. Yeah. No, his mom owned like a bird shop, but it wasn't even like a pet shop. It was like a fucking bird sanctuary shop or whatever.
Yeah.
And like he had no friends and was always bullied and like he was super smart and like, you know, whatever. But he like kind of looked like a bird because he had like the elongated nose or whatever. But when it comes down to it, he's really just like a criminal's criminal. Like he's an arms dealer and like he tries to keep himself like, you know, especially in the more modern comics of the last like 20 years. Like he has the Iceberg Lounge and shit and he's got that like whole facade of like being legitimate. He's more like a mob boss, really.
Yeah.
So that was a big like leap of faith on the Warner Brothers' part.
Like the whole like to just say the whole crazy opening where like, well, like, Austin came out with Paul Rubens and then like he gets born and is like all deformed, so like they like shove him off the hill or whatever in his stroller. He ends up in an abandoned like zoo with like the penguins
racing. Put him in a goddamn basket and throw him into like
a river.
A river on Christmas Eve.
And then the penguins race.
I think Batman Returns is like the unofficial Christmas movie.
It is.
It really is, though. That's a good point.
It all takes place, like, on Christmas week, I think, pretty much.
Is it a week, though? I thought it was longer than that.
I don't know.
It's like a month
Christmas
or two.
Yeah.
New Year's happens, isn't it? Because it starts with the lighting of the tree, so you'd have to think it's, like, maybe the end of November. Or, like, beginning of December. I have no idea.
There's Christmas.
I thought.
And, of course, you get, like, Christopher Walken. It's Max von Schreck.
Max Schreck.
There's no Von. I thought there was a Von in there, but I guess it's just Max Schreck.
He probably is Max von Schreck, but Schreck.
Yo, I'm Christopher Walken. I'm in a Batman
movie. Yeah.
I really liked his Mr. son.
Mayor.
He pretends to have that accent, too.
Yeah.
Dad, go. Dad.
Celine, I don't like your work, so I'm going to throw you out the window. Oh, and there's, like, things that almost happened, like Billy Dee Williams as Harvey Dent.
Oh, man, yeah.
Like, imagine him as Two-Face. That would have been so awesome.
Yeah. I have to say, obviously, I'm a huge Batman fan, but just to whore out the Batman, the original movies on Blu-ray, if it's not enough for you to just, like, own the movies in high def with, like, full surround sound and stuff, it's definitely worth owning. For the extras, because holy shit, there is just so much stuff that I never knew or that nobody ever really knew about these movies. Like what Zach just said, like the whole Billy Dee Williams thing, like, even going back to the first Batman, Robin was in that movie. Like he wasn't in the final movie, obviously, but like the final storyboards of the movie had a sequence in which Robin appears and it basically like tells Dick Grayson's story, sets him up to become Robin, and has him as Robin all in one scene.
Mm-hmm.
So very convoluted, but I mean, it was in there. So like, that's something that would have been nuts. And then Billy Dee Williams was basically all but like assured that he was coming back for the second movie. And then later in Batman Forever, he would be replaced by Tommy Lee Jones.
And let's not talk about that.
Yeah. No, but in all legitimacy, though, he really was, like, convinced, and he was told that he was going to be Harvey Dent. They're like, okay, well, no, we're not going with Harvey in the next one. We're going to let that breathe a little bit, and then we're going to have him come in the next movie. He's like, oh, okay, well, you just call me then. They're like, sure, Billy, sure.
I would drink my Colt 45.
Colt 45 is the most refreshing malt liquor I've ever drank. I drink it on the Millennium Falcon from time to time. I have a keep. Therefore, I know what I'm talking about.
God, I love that man.
I know. He can do no wrong.
And I guess the only other thing about Batman Returns is, like, probably the most psychotic Catwoman ever on film.
Oh, I know. That's really just her meltdown in her apartment to this day is very disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just such a weird scene.
Then she just, like, goes out and just, like, attacking people. Like, viciously attacking people.
I know.
I am Catwoman. Like, hear me roar.
Hear me roar. Wow, it's so weird. Like, when she attacks that guy or whatever, that, like, would-be mugger in the alley.
Yeah.
And she tells that fucked-up story about him. Like, oh, yeah, Joey something or other. Like, he... the only person that noticed that I wasn't wearing panties to school one day. And then she's like, yeah, he's dead now. And everyone's just like, oh, okay.
And then it's like, of course, there's like rocket, like the penguins with rockets on their backs and stuff. And like,
damn it.
The crazy, like, rubber duck car.
I try to block out, like, the last 15 minutes of that movie so much.
Like, the penguin has, like, a circus gang working for him for some reason, too.
The Triangle Circus Gang.
The Red Triangle Circus. They're crazy, like, demon bikers and fire, like, guys on stilts with, like, flaming pins and...
Creative liberties much? Batman blows a man up with dynamite in this movie. Yeah. Anyone else remember that?
Yep.
He smiles about it, too. He blows up a Bam Bam Bigelow lookalike.
Doesn't he, like, make, like, a pun on it, too?
No. He just, like, punches him in the stomach, and the guy's like, is that the best you got? Like, he gives him a look like that, and then he looks down, and he put a fucking
bomb on,
like, dynamite bomb on him. And then he throws him into a ditch, and he explodes.
Yes.
You see parts of a man
yep.
fly through the air. No blood, of course.
Yeah.
But he fucking explodes. And people are like, yeah!
Batman!
Like,
that's
awesome. Batman! And meanwhile, the, like, comic nerds are like, but no. Not like this, Bruce.
I'm Batman.
My parents weren't blown up. They were shot. As long as I don't shoot anyone, I'm not a hypocrite.
Yep. All right, so why don't we get to the rest of these quick, because we've been talking for, like, 2.5 hours or whatever.
I know.
So Ed Wood was after that. Any thoughts about Ed Wood, guys? I haven't seen that one yet.
I've not seen it.
It's pretty good. I'm a fan of the classic horror movies, so it's really nice to see, like, the modern day versions of, like, the actors portraying old versions. Like, I forgot what actor portrays Bela Lugosi, but it's just like Bela Lugosi as, like, not in character.
Yeah,
you know, it's just like him fumbling around as an old man, and just like then they make Planet 9 from Outer Space.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Because Ed Wood made that as, like, is, like, one of his crowning jewels, and it's, like, it's a terrible movie. And
Worst movie ever made.
Yeah, so Ed Wood directed it, so this movie's about, like, him rising up as an up-and-coming director to make that movie.
Yep.
So, it's nice. I really do enjoy that movie for, like, it's a movie within a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Within a movie.
So then after that was Mars Attacks, which I love. Which I don't know how do you guys feel about Mars Attacks?
I haven't seen it in so long, I need to give it another fair shot.
The cast of that movie is fucking crazy.
And, like,
yeah, it's like everyone that ever owed him a favor is just, like, in that movie.
Yeah. And, like, the Martians are, like, so hilarious. But, like, I love the whole montage where, like, there's, like, girl on the Earth just, like, fucking it up. Like, recarving more and, like, bowling on Easter Island and, like, destroying the Taj Mahal after taking a picture of it. Just pretty much acting like dicks.
Yeah.
And Jack Nicholson is, like, pretty much as awesome in that movie, too. Because the president...
Yeah, he's awesome in every movie.
Like, the president and, like, the sleazy, like, Las Vegas guy. And I love, what's going on? Someone's readjusting.
Oh, my bad.
Okay. I just love, like, when Congress gets blown up and he's like, I want the people to know that they still have 2 out of 3 branches of the government working for them, and that ain't bad. Yeah, so I gotta get that on Blu-ray. I think it just came out on Blu-ray a couple weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I've got to add that to the old queue.
Then after that was Sleepy Hollow.
Oh, next.
Yeah, I never saw that before.
Well, you didn't
although
see
I love the Christopher Walken. Okay, never mind. I won't say what I was going to say then, but you definitely need to see that movie.
I know Christopher Walken is like the head of the horseman.
Dad, no.
And then, let's see, Planet of the Apes was after that.
That movie's... You guys know about the Kevin Smith controversy with that whole thing? How that was that whole panel or from the Clerks comic or whatever about like the Planet of the Apes joke that he makes in that book. Fucking they have like the ape's head on like the Lincoln Memorial and all that stuff, and like that was in Clerks first. Like, that was Kevin Smith's thing.
Oh, my God.
And then he was like, you son of a bitch. Like, you stole that from me. And they knew each other because of what we'll talk about in a minute, a movie project that they were both attached to for some time that never panned out, thank God. But, yeah, they were familiar with each other's work. Obviously, Kevin Smith more so with Tim Burton's than, you know, vice versa. But he was accused of stealing that from Kevin Smith. And Kevin Smith at the time was still kind of like a nobody. So it was just like a blurb in like articles about the movie or blurbs about articles about how much ass Tim Burton kicks. And Tim Burton's rebuttal to stealing that stuff from Kevin Smith's Clerks comic was, and I'm loosely quoting here, but the, you know, it's basically the same gist. Well, why would I ever read a comic book? And then Kevin Smith is like, well, that explains the first two fucking Batman movies, you dumbass. Like, are you kidding me? Like, how could you come out and say that? That's like your most well-known movie.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least one of the most widely praised, like the first Batman and then, like, to a lesser degree, Batman Returns. But goddamn.
Yep. Well, I just love...
Little random factoid. Mm-hmm. Sorry, folks.
I love, like, how the end of Planet of the Apes makes no fucking sense whatsoever.
Most of that movie makes no fucking sense. Are you
kidding
me?
Like, the ending in particular, because it's like, where did the apes come from that they could, like, conquer the Earth?
Well, the whole twist is that it's not Earth.
Is it? Oh, like, is that it?
It's like the planet of the apes.
Well, I just remember that, like, on FX, when they do, you know, like DVD on TV?
Yeah.
Like, they had, like, a whole, like, segment of, like, them trying to explain the ending. They're like, well, you know, what if Tim Ross' character, like, found the original space pod that Mark Wahlberg crashed in the swamp, and he got in that, and then went into a time where it went and conquered Earth in the past? Like, doesn't that make sense?
Did that actually happen?
No, I don't think so. No, that doesn't happen, but...
I think I remember him saying something... about his movie being literally about the planet of the apes and not about the planet of the humans, which gets inhabited by apes.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, like something weird like that, where like that's the twist. Like that's the modern twist he put on it.
They spent way too much fucking time like trying to make everyone like move like apes realistically and less time on like the actual script and dialogue and everything else.
I know. That movie was all eye candy.
Yeah.
It's basically all it was.
Just,
which is fine. You know, there have to be movies like that, too.
Just like Tim Roth is like a fucking monkey, just like jumping all over the place.
Yeah.
But Claire Duncan, though, it's like genius casting for like a giant gorilla.
God damn, you're not kidding.
Kind of typecasting there.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Harvey has a great stand-up comedy bit about when he found out that Michael Clark Duncan was going to be in the Planet of the Apes remake. And he's all pissed at him on his radio show. And he's like, so tell me, Michael Clark Duncan, since you're going to be setting your people back 200 years, why don't you tell me how much you're going to pay you? And he's like, well, dog, they're fixing to pay me about $10 million. And Steve Harvey's like, now, for $4 million, I'd be the best goddamn monkey you ever seen. Like, it's very funny. Definitely check it out.
Yeah. And then I think that was like sort of like the first big like Mark Wahlberg starring role.
Oh, God. Poor Mark Wahlberg.
Mm-hmm. I think everyone was like, Marky Mark's gonna be in a movie?
Hell yeah! He's back!
And then, like, was it? Stella Warren or something? Like, she was only in that movie and she just, like, vanished off the face of the earth.
Yeah, wasn't she supposed to be, like, the next, like, hot, like, starlet or whatever?
I think so. And then she went, like, I think the last movie she did was, like, some, it was on, like, Screen.com's, like, 3 Days of Hate. It was, like, some horrible, like, horror movie, direct-to-DVD horror movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. So, after Planet of the Apes, we have Big Fish.
You ever seen it?
Never seen it, Joe?
I've never seen it
either. Chris, have you seen it?
No, it's a very heartwarming tale.
So that's what I hear about it.
Yeah, like it's a weird fairy tale, modern
Whimsical
fairy tale.
Is the good word to describe
not
it.
Not Tim Burton.
Well, yeah, it's nice. It's definitely not like a movie you watch more than once a year. It's definitely like you throw it on, you enjoy it, and like it's a family movie kind of.
Yeah.
Thing. So, not like.
Hey, I feel like we're leaving out something really huge.
Oh, what would that be, Joe?
Like fucking The Nightmare Before Christmas?
Well, he didn't direct that. He produced that.
Yeah, but it's Tim Burton's The Nightmare
Before
Christmas.
Yeah, okay, so we can talk about that
his
now.
Name is part of the fucking title.
I'm just looking at his directing things, but we can talk about...
Okay, well, fine. He also was heavily involved in...
Nightmare Before Christmas.
Nightmare Before Christmas. You can edit that out. Moving right along. Where were we in our totally natural flow of conversation?
We can talk about it now, Joe.
Whatever.
If you don't know the plot by now, you know.
If you don't know,
songs
just...
And fantastic animation and...
Go to a hot topic.
Go to a hot topic.
God damn, what is the obsession with Jack Skellington's face?
An oogie boogie.
Like, every fat emo girl I've ever seen a picture of or come across in my entire life has, like, Jack Skellington, like, tattooed on her or, like, on part of her body, like, as jewelry or something.
I remember a long time ago, it was really hard to find, like, Jack Skellington, like, Nightmare Before Christmas clothing, because it was, like, the fan base was very, like, small. Like, it was popular, but small compared to, like, today.
Well, it's a cult classic now.
Yeah.
Right. But then it became, like, it boomed so fast to the point where, like, I wanted, like, a Jack Skellington hoodie as a kid. And then I saw everyone had it. I was like, no, I don't want it anymore. Like,
no, NVM.
Well, there was, like, a couple of years in a row where they kept, like, re-releasing it, like, Christmas time in 3D. Like, every year.
In the third dimension.
Which I've heard makes it, like, really awesome because it looks like you're, like, in a diorama or something.
That's going to be a sick 3D Blu-ray. Like true 3D,
yes.
You know? Not the, like, oh, this scene, his dong flies out at you. Like, a real, like, immersive, like, 3D Blu-ray experience. Mm-hmm. That's going to be cool.
Yep.
I'd love to see it in IMAX 3D. That would
oh
be
my
sick.
God.
I feel like heads would explode. If they really, like, sank a lot of money into that project.
Mm-hmm.
They'd make it all back, though. They really would.
So, getting back to, like, to the directing stuff, there's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which was after Big Fish.
Hi.
Super weird.
Super uncalled for. How rude, Tim Burton.
I know.
Why? Who needed that?
Like, how do you top Gene Wilder?
Why do you need to?
Well, he needed... Giant Depp needed some money for, like, a new boat.
Mm-hmm.
And
for a new boat full of cocaine.
It's like they just wanted to make a modern remake of it. And it was like that called for, but you know, it exists.
He called the boat.
Someone was going to do it eventually. You know, someone was going to eventually do it. Unfortunately, this is not the movie to surpass it.
And it was like, I guess it was closer to like the original book too.
Yeah. They should have really done a sequel to the book.
Charlie's Revenge.
Or, like, what was it? The Golden Elevator or something? Was it like,
the Glass Elevator.
Glass Elevator, yeah.
Oh.
Where they, like, actually, like, go to, like...
They go to, like, Mars.
Yeah.
Like, and they conquer, like, planetary chocolate factories.
There's, like, vicious canids and everything that they mentioned in the original, but they actually, like, see them this time.
Yep.
Yep, so that was weird. And then there's, Corpse Bride. Sort of, like, trying to recapture that... Nightmare Before Christmas magic, but it didn't really work.
The whole thing seems like one big deleted scene.
Yeah, pretty much. And then Sweeney Todd.
Didn't see it.
Didn't see it?
I liked it.
I liked it too.
I mean, it's definitely not like... It's a really classic musical, so he already has like a structured basis like this. He can't fuck it up. And all I can do is make it like more... dreary and make it like an artistic flair to it, but like the overall story he didn't change, which is good. You know, he didn't fuck around, unlike he did with Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
And probably the goriest musical you ever see.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Funny story is I learned of Sweeney Todd through Jersey Girl.
Okay.
You know, the one that Ben Affleck.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, as opposed to the other Jersey Girl.
There is. There's one with Donna.
Oh, God. Chris, how dare you utter her name? It's like fucking Voldemort.
What?
You don't want her to hear her name and then, like, demand royalties from us.
Great.
Mm-hmm. So, well, and then, like, the last thing, like, the most recent thing that Tim Burton directed is Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, God damn it. He needs to go back to doing, like, original shit.
Yeah, he's not been very successful really with, like, adaptations of shit. Except Batman.
No. Yeah, really.
Like remakes and, like, adaptations of original things he's not very good at.
He's not the best at it, you know.
But mm-hmm.
It's nice.
Oh, yeah, oh no, it's not. He's not terrible at it. He's just gotten worse. Like, significantly
well,
worse
I think
over time.
Like, he's become, like have you seen, like, that College Humor video where, like, Tim Burton became like a parody of himself now.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I'm Tim, like, all right, guys, for my next movie, we're getting Johnny Depp, give me Danny Elfman on the phone for the score, my wife's going to be in it, and we're going to make it dark and creepy of, like, a classic children's story. Let's do it. I want a script in, like, a week.
That's basically what it's come down to, huh?
Yeah. I think he said, like, I want Danny Elfman to come in and do it, like, no, actually, like, he Danny Elfman's like in a corner. He's like, Danny, what do you got for this new movie? He's like, I got, like, it's like, perfect.
That's basically the formula, though.
10 more of those, and we'll have a score.
Nice. Yeah, but two little notes.
Mm-hmm.
The first, there was a doomed adaptation by Tim Burton in the 90s that some of you may be familiar with, some of you may not be familiar with. It was to be called Superman Lives.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going to star the
greatest American actor
ever. Yes.
Nicolas Cage.
One of the greatest screen actors of all time. The incomparable, the insatiable Nicolas Cage as Kal-El.
Mm-hmm.
The last son of Krypton. Who has to use math to save the Earth from polar bears. It was a big fucking mess. I highly suggest Wikipedia-ing.
Just find a picture of Nicolas Cage in that horrible Superman
costume. Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, he looks like a strung-out Jesus in a plastic, like, Japanese, like, prostitute outfit. Like, it's really terrible. And there are pictures of suit tests because apparently there was, like, fiber optic lighting. And not, like, cool fiber optic lighting. Like, it was, like, the shit that's in, like, the roofs of, like, nice limousines. Like, on the suit where, like, it sparkled and glowed and all this weird, like, unnecessary shit. And, like, the S lit up and it was just going to be terrible. WB was really trying to reboot the Superman series. Well, not reboot, but, like, rekindle an interest in the Superman series, and, like, they did it all throughout the 90s, and it culminated in Superman Returns, which we all know how that went.
Yep.
But the point is, like, ever since 1992, 93, they were trying really actively and sunk millions and millions of dollars into these doomed Superman projects. At one point, they wound up paying a fan by the name of Alex Ford millions of dollars because he outlined, like, I think it was a 3-movie arc in a presentation to the WB where he just, like, had an agent who, like, believed in him. And the WB was so desperate for, like, a good Superman story that he took, like, a general adaptation of the comics, made it work for the screen. And they're like, they basically, like, J. Jonah Jameson'd him. They're like, it's terrible. We'll give you $10 million for it. And he was like, okay. And they brought on Kevin Smith to, like, write, or depending on who you talk to, he wrote it or just, like, repaired it. And there's, like, a Kevin Smith draft. But, like, according to him, he says that he needed, like, to include two things in the script. One was that he had to fight polar bears in the Fortress of Solitude. And two was that he had to fight, literally had to fight, giant spiders in space. Giant mechanical spiders. And I swear to God, they wound up being used in, I forget who it is, but whoever did Wild Wild West.
Yes.
Those giant spiders are literally right out of the production art for Superman Lives, which he also did the production art for. There's a ton of fucked up production art online. Superman at one point has an all black suit with like a silver S on it and like all these really weird like dominatrix type things on it. There was a poster that was released for the movie that was at one of the licensing shows where it shows like all the big companies and like the new ad campaigns are going to have in the next year. Like, you know, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. Like, they always have it at, like, the Jacob Javits Center in New York. And, like, when Batman Begins was coming out, like, they had the Tumblr there. And they had, like, all the, like, WB shit that was coming out. Well, they had this giant fucking poster. It was black with a weird gothic-looking stylized silver S on it. And it just said, like, Lives 1996. Like, this shit is all online, people. Mm-hmm. I'm not kidding. Just Google Superman Lives with quotation marks and you'll find it. So it's really better that this movie was never ever made, but I'm just like very intrigued by the whole way it played out and how people were paid literally millions of dollars to be in a movie that was never made. Like Nicolas Cage and Tim Burton both have pay or play contracts where it's like, I either am in the movie and I get paid, or the movie by no fault of my own never gets made and I still get like the full money that I'm entitled to. And we're not talking like a couple of $100,000. We're talking millions and millions of bucks for like showing up and getting fitted for a costume, or in Tim Burton's case, like going to a few meetings and reading a few scripts. So that's probably better that never happened. but looking to the future, it's ironic because his next movie is actually a fucking adaptation. But it's right up his alley. It's going to be the Dark Shadows adaptation with Johnny Depp as Barnabas Collins.
Yep.
And it's kind of weird that I know a lot about this show, but it's like my mom's favorite show of all time. And I happen to know a little bit about it. It's a very interesting soap opera from the 60s that dealt with like werewolves, zombies, witchcraft. Like, it's very cool. Very cheesy now, obviously, and very dated. But I guess it's like, I guess this is like before White Zombie.
Yeah.
And this was like pushing the limits at the time. So it's just cool that horror had like a weekly television series like that wasn't like Vampire Diaries or like There's a Douche in My Closet, like weird like watered down horror stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So again, another adaptation, and I feel like this is very safe for him. And the reason I say that is because like it's so gothic and so stylized to begin with that any creative liberties he takes with this movie like will make sense. Like to make Alice in Wonderland gothic and to take those creative liberties and make it like dark and twisted and kind of like, I guess not morbid, but you know what I mean? Make it very Tim Burton-esque.
Yeah.
That's a risk. But to do it with Dark Shadows, well,
who cares?
It's just like updating it.
Yeah.
And it's like logical, I guess, adaptation for it. Like I'll put it to you like this. I may not be like counting down the days for this movie to come out, but I'm certainly very excited that Tim Burton is handling it because I can't really think of anyone else off the top of my head that it would make sense for and that I could possibly be excited about doing it. Like, there's no other name that I'd be like, oh, man, really? Michael Bay? Dark Shadows? That's going to be awesome. Like, I would never think that for anyone else but Tim Burton. So we may have been a little bit hard on him at times, you know, but it's just because we really do like his work.
Mm-hmm.
And we just want him to make good stuff.
Yep.
That we like and can get paid for reviewing and enjoying.
Tim Burton, make us a movie we want.
Yes. That's all we want.
All right, so I think that's finally going to do it for this week's episode of the Everything Action Cast.
How dare you?
3 hours later. Chris, I think we might have finally beaten the Power Rangers episode.
Well, we can try.
So if you want more from us, you can go to www.everythingaction.com. And I think we're probably going to start ramping up for our like end of year like top 10 list, and of course the Kick-Ass Awards, which are, is our annual hilarious award show.
I'm going to wear a suit.
You should.
I will.
And you can also email us at contact@everythingaction.com. Find us on Twitter at twitter.com/EVAction, which Joe updates with a bunch of interesting news stories and commentary.
Incessantly
like that.
Updating.
Yes.
You will quickly unfollow.
Retweets up the wazoo.
Yes, because I'm lazy. and I don't feel the need to say, this is happening. Mm-hmm. Here is a link.
Interesting. Retweet.
Yes. Hmm. Really? Question mark?
And you can also find us on Facebook at Facebook. Just search for Everything Action on Facebook. And go to the iTunes Music Store and search in the music store for Everything Action Cast. And you can get subscribe there, get episodes, rate us, comment. Also get our app on there, which gives you the last 20 news stories we put on everythingaction.com. And you can listen to episodes on there, too. So and it's free, so definitely check that out.
It really is a very well-designed app, people. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm an appsman, and it's definitely one of the best out there, in my opinion.
Awesome. So, yeah, for Chris and Joe, I'm Zach, and we will see you next week.